that's a different song. Oh, I was, I think, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. Hey, everybody, how are you? That's F the CC, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, all right. That kind of threw me for a while. I was thinking, that doesn't sound like The Revolution Starts Now. That's a title cut from Steve Earle's new song, or rather new album, new CD. And, I have to think about this one. Get back to the drawing boards. Hey, how you doing? Glad to be with you. 11 degrees in part of 11 degrees below zero in part of our listening area here in the Detroit metro area. And about a foot or so of snow on the ground. A lot of people doing a lot worse. Old Mother Nature kicking some butt, huh? All right. I'm still recovering from the wrong song there, but that's life in radio. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number, and we have all open lines, so you can begin talking about anything your little hearts desire, within reason, of course. Let's see, if you would like to email me, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. My website is peterwerbe.com. PETERWERBE.com. A lot of times there's articles on that to kind of expand what we're talking about. If you'd like to be in a chat room while the program is going on, Tom Hartman is gracious enough to let us use his. So you can go to TomHartman.com. Any way you spell it, it'll come out. You go to the chat room, and you can begin chatting. All right, so here's what I would pose to you. The inauguration of George W. Bush for his second term, to me, totally illegitimate since he stole the first election. Many of you, and I don't know that I'm not among them, think he stole the second one as well by shenanigans in Ohio. But let me say this. One of the probably 217 reasons that I don't feel very joyous about this inauguration is that if things had gone properly, if the election of 2000 had been going had gone the constitutional and legal way, we would have been having an inauguration of Al Gore for his second term, but be that what it may. In every regard, it was just this repellent spectacle. And I'll read you, if you think, oh, God, how can that guy say that on the air? And I wasn't even going to start with that, but maybe I will, just so you know, you just don't. I mean, I am kind of far off the edge. I realize that. But everyone else is catching up with me. Everything I have saying, been saying over the almost the years, I guess it's gratifying to know that now it's even in the mainstream press. Rochelle Riley wrote a piece about, in fact, one of the things I'd like you to do before I get into this, if you either saw this spectacle of the inauguration, or the coronation, as I would call it, on television and have an opinion, either positive or negative, 313-298-WRIF, or if you were there, attended as a good Republican, or as a bad Democrat, or independent, objecting, if you will, to this event, this spectacle. Here's what Bob Herbert and then the prestigious New York Times, essentially the paper of record of the United States, the single most prestigious newspaper. I'm saying this to kind of legitimize what I've been saying all these, now what is it, years? Oh, man. Anyways, here's what Bob Herbert said on January 21st, the next day. Watching the inaugural ceremonies yesterday reminded me of the scenes near the end of The Godfather, in which a solemn occasion, a baptism in the movie, is interspersed with a series of spectacular violent murders. Even as President Bush was taking the oath of office and delivering his inaugural address beneath the clear, cold skies of Washington, the news wires were churning out stories about the tragic mayhem in Iraq. There's no end in sight to the carnage which was unleashed nearly 2 years ago by President Bush's decision to launch this wholly unnecessary war, one of the worst presidential decisions in American history. Incredibly, with more than 1,360 American troops dead and more than 10,000 wounded, and with scores of thousands of Iraqis dead and wounded, the president never once mentioned the word Iraq in his inaugural address. He avoided all but the most general references to the war. In January 45, with the war still raging, World War II, Franklin Roosevelt said, Mr. Chief Justice, Mr. Vice President, my friends, you will understand, and I believe, agree with my wish that the form of this inauguration be simple and its words brief. Instead, now this is me, This is me, Peter Werbe. This isn't Bob Herbert. We were treated to this circus, this coronation, this... Here, let him say. Times have changed. President Bush and his equally tone-deaf supporters spent the past few days partying hard while Americans, Iraqis, and others continue to suffer and die in Iraq. Nothing was too good for the prince and princesses of the new American plutocracy. Plutocracy, that's the rule of the rich. Tens of millions of dollars were spent on fireworks, cocktail receptions, gala dinners, and sumptuous balls. 10,000 people, including the president, Laura Bush, turned out Wednesday night for the Black Tie and Boots Ball. According to the Associated Press, one of the guests, Lorian Sessions of San Antonio, quote, donned a new pair of black kangaroo boots decorated with a white star and embroidery with an aqua-colored mink wrap she bought on sale at Saks. Yeah, isn't that nice? The disconnect between the over-the-top celebrations in Washington and the hideous reality of Iraq does not in any way surprise me, says Bob Herbert. It's exactly what we should expect from the president and his supporters, who seem always to exist in a fantasy realm far removed from such ugly realities as war and suffering. In that realm, you can start wars without having to deal with the consequences of them. You don't even have to pay for them. You can put them on a credit card. This is characteristic, by the way, of the ultra-wealthy. They never have to pay for any of their mistakes, just like George Bush never had to pay for any of the mistakes that he made throughout his life, including the financial ones, including legal ones. Hey, he's the only president of the United States that ever entered the office with a rap sheet, right? Here's what he concludes. People traveling in the real world may see Iraq as a place where bombings, kidnappings, and assassinations are an integral part of daily life, where police officers are blown to pieces as they line up for their pay, where innocent men, women, and children are slain by the thousands for no good reasons, where cities like Fallujah are leveled in order to save them, where America's overwhelming superiority and firepower has not been enough to win the war, and where the upcoming elections seem very much like a joke since many of the candidates have to keep their identities secret, and the locations of many polling places remain undisclosed. People traveling in the real world may see Iraq that way, but in the fantasy-laden Bush realm, Iraq is a place where freedom is on the march, so why not raise a toast to freedom and dance the night away? So they spent millions of our dollars on, you know, we didn't pay for the fireworks, we didn't pay for all the richies to get together and celebrate that they have someone committed to their class, the upper class, and they must have been laughing and giving people high fives that actually people in the middle class and the working class actually voted for somebody committed to destroying what's left of middle class and working class life. The poor be damned, of course, absolutely. But we spent millions, tens of millions of dollars, you and me, our money, on this security state of envelopment of Washington, D.C. If things are that bad, but it might have been a good idea not even to have held it in with such a splash, with such a public presentation, with handbell ringers and pom-pom dancers and all of that. And with all these millions of dollars spent on security, bringing in cops from California and Texas and North Carolina so they could, you know, parade up there in the big spectacle. I'm looking at a photograph here where someone hit Vice President Cheney's limousine with a snowball, which means they could have done it with anything else, right? So all that money spent for security, and somebody still lobs a snowball. This inaugural address by Bush was just beyond belief, but, I mean, it's just part of the fantasy world. He says, it's a policy of the United States to seek and support the growth of democratic movements and institutions in every nation and culture with the ultimate goal of ending tyranny in our world. Well, that must have scared the hell out of Saudi Arabia. United States ally over there. Must have scared the hell out of Kuwait. Little dictatorship there. Must have scared the hell out of Egypt, where we give billions of dollars a year in aid to, and is a torture state, where the United States turns over prisoners to have them brutally tortured, and there's no democracy there in any real sense. Pakistan, the same thing. What about China, our trading partner? What are we going to do about them? Kazakhstan, all these places. I mean, I'm sure Pappy Bush probably called his Saudi pals and said, hey, you know, the kid, man, it's just for the rubes. It's for the consumption of the rubes that will think, yes, we stand for democracy. America will not impose our own style of government on the unwilling. Maybe it's not talking about Iraq, huh? We will persistently clarify the choice before every ruler in every nation, the moral choice being a lot of good words here. The rulers of outlaw regimes can know that we still believe, and then he quotes Lincoln. You know, you can't invade a country against international law and then not be called an outlaw regime yourself. So George W. Bush has made the United States into an outlaw regime. So this is all just smoke and mirrors. It's just total BS. And when you think about these nations that Bush corralled into the coalition of the billing, right, so they'd all get U.S. Oh, no, I'm sorry, the coalition of the willing. That's right. By the way, so many people are dropping out of that they have they've stopped using that phrase. But most of the countries involved in it are they're unwilling. They're not the coalition of the willing. They are, in fact, the countries of the unwilling. In the January 21st New York Times, there was a full-page ad from, let me see, how many people here? 4,000 Icelanders. People from Iceland took out a full-page ad denouncing Bush, the invasion of Iraq, they say, not in our name. This is one of the coalition of the willing. And they say over 4,000 Icelanders made donations to publish this declaration. As a proportion of the national population, this would be equivalent to 4 million Americans taking part in it. And what they say is that they protest in the strongest possible terms, we citizens of Iceland, against the Icelandic authorities' support for the invasion of Iraq by the United States. With their declaration of support, the Icelandic authorities violated Icelandic law, international law, and Icelandic democratic tradition. The decision to support the invasion was made unilaterally by the Prime Minister and Foreign Minister of Iceland without prior discussion by Iceland's Parliamentary Committee on Foreign Affairs. This is mandatory under Icelandic law, which says that all major foreign policy issues shall be discussed by the committee. This decision has not been debated, much less approved either by the Parliament or by the government of Iceland. So this violates Icelandic democratic rule. So rather than, in someone's dreamland, that this war against Iraq, this destruction of that country, the mass murder of its citizens, the deaths of our soldiers, the wasting of our treasury, this is the absolute exact opposite of anything democratic. Well, I'd like to hear your opinion. This isn't even what I was going to talk about. I was going to bring this up, and I do want to hear if you either what you thought of the inauguration spectacle or and by the way, a number of people said, well, you didn't say anything about Clinton's inauguration. And I don't know whether I did or I didn't. Please remind me when if they ever let another Democrat or someone from another party get elected. Remind me about that I objected to the entire spectacle of all of this. Yeah, this is supposed to be a democratic and secular nation. That's the way it was set up. I mean, the fear of the power of government is enshrined in our Constitution, and the fear of the intertwining of government and religion was feared by the founders of this country. And the idea was that there were no royalty, that the people that led the country were administrators. They weren't blessed by God. They certainly weren't picked by God. I mean, that insanity and inanity. And rather, they should be fellow citizens. After the French Revolution, remember they called each other fellow citizens. We're all the same. There's not a ruling class anymore. Well, now there's the rulers, Bush and his pals, and the Richies, and us, the ruled. But just like in every monarchy, just like in Hitler's Germany, just like in Stalin's Soviet Union, there are people that love to be ruled. They love the rulers, even though these rulers act in their own interest and the interests of the small class around them, whether it's communism or fascism or so-called democratic capitalism like we have here. They love the rules of rulers, and they love the pomp and circumstance of the rulers. They love their finery. So when Laura Bush and the rest of them are all these gowns, they say, oh, that's so nice. Oh, look at them. And because it's power. Because they're so little. They're so little. Wilhelm Reich, like Third Reich, but he's not that kind of guy. Wilhelm, I'm going very German on you. Wilhelm Reich wrote this book called Listen, Little Man. Talking to the little people, including me and you, of this world, and why we're willing to submit to authority in the manner that we are. And the lovers of authority love the pomp and circumstance of authority. They love the trappings of authority. And worst of all, they love to be ruled. And why that's so bad? Is because it's absolutely antithetical to life in a democratic society. I mean, if George W. Bush walked in this room, or what's that guy that just got married with all the hair, that stupid rich guy? They have a whole miniseries about him. Trump. I mean, so many people would be so impressed by being around them. But a person with a Democratic personality, small d, nothing to do with the Democratic Party, or a Bill Clinton walked in. I go, hey, that's cool. Guy's the president or the past president or a real rich guy. But I wouldn't have any, but people just quiver in front of power, people of prestige, people of wealth. And that is not the kind of personality that works best within a democratic society. Some people have more talent. Some people have gifts and all of that, and those are to be respected and appreciated. And I do that. And sometimes I am in awe of the talent that people have. Not in awe of a talent of a guy that can make lots of money. I mean, I've known too many grubbers, too many money grubbers that have become wealthy that are just despicable human beings. In fact, I think most of them, never mind. Let's not go there. Anyway. So I'm just sort of off on it all. I was going to talk about corruption too, but we'll get to that in a minute. So where should we go? Oh, all right. Let's do this. I got to push this button on our brand new board. And, it's, my old pal, Jalene calling from Miami, Florida. Jalene, welcome back to the program. You were going to go to the protest in Washington, D.C. Did you make it?
I made it, and oh, Peter, listening to you, I tell you, it's just my emotions are all over the place because I was there, and what you're saying about how democracy, you're talking about democracy and what democracy really is. Well, let me tell you what, we were animals caged, as well you would expect, right?
Are you talking about the demonstrators now?
Yes.
Yeah. So you mean the police had you in cages?
Yeah, yeah, and I sent you some pictures. I don't know if you have received them yet, but we were behind, go figure. You and I were at the FTAA, anti-FTAA rally in Miami together, and mm-hmm. You've been to many. For how many years have you been going? few years, right, Peter?
Yeah, I think it was during the Korean War when I started. Go ahead.
Okay, so first of all, I have never seen so many fur coats in my life.
Were you yelling, dead animals, dead animals?
Well, you know, I stayed in a hotel in DuPont Circle in the area, and all these fur coats, and it was so disgusting, and I wanted to yell that, but actually, at the actual action that we're talking about, it really was quite disturbing, because we were there in the name of peace, aren't we always?
Sure.
So I have these people in front of us with signs. Here's an example. In the 1940s, the U.S. hanged war criminals. On January 20th, 2005, the U.S. inaugurated one.
You think that was inappropriate?
I thought it was beautiful. I'm giving you examples of what I saw.
Okay. All right.
And so my new T-shirt that I'm wearing right now is Stop Bitching and Start a Revolution.
All right. Did you buy that?
I did.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's very cool. I actually pulled out a piece from the New York Times. It's called Demonstrators Revel in Opposition on Big Day for President. For all their disgust with President Bush's inauguration, protesters could have hardly have been happier. They screamed, they chanted, they held up signs, they got their message onto the national television. And then it talks about people being arrested, and at least one woman naked, but for red, white, and blue underpants, was hustled off. Somebody burned a flag. So here, I mean, one of the reasons that people scream and chant and hold up signs is because the ideas that tens of millions of Americans hold, those in opposition to George W. Bush and his gang, are virtually, they're not presented ever in any coherent manner. So one, it's not like there's an opposition party. They all went to the coronation. So we're left doing what you, Jalene, did.
Yes, and absolutely, and it was a wonderful thing to do. In fact, later in the evening, over the loudspeaker, we hear, and now the President of the United States, George W. Bush, and so you hear, boo.
I could hear that during his inaugural address.
Okay. Well, I was having dinner later in another section of town, and there went the cavalcade, or whatever the hell you call it, his freaking, you know...
motorcade.
Thank you. So we booed again, and I loved it. And I tell you what, Peter, it was a tough thing to be there, because you're around all of these... You're in D.C. D.C. is so full of fervor and everything like that. And I'm just having a Mexican dinner, and he drives by, and I'm like booing again. But I let someone boo before me. I'm ashamed. I had to have someone else do it first.
That's all right. You don't have to be the first booer. What hotel did you stay in?
I stayed at the Jury's, J-U-R-Y. In Washington, right on DuPont Circle.
I like that area. DuPont Circle is very cool. I always,
it was wonderful.
We always, whenever we go to New York to protest, we always stay in DuPont Circle.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Now, listen, I would like to change this up a bit because, we've talked, Peter, about how my dad is a
Republican.
Right-winger,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
So I tried to hide the fact that I went to this protest.
Yeah?
And apparently he found out.
Wow.
So... His main concern is that some crazy person is going to shoot me with a gun or, you know.
Sure, he's a dad.
Right, he's a dad, right. Very, 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 you know, good point, whatever. And I said to him, well, Peter Werby has been doing this for a lot of years.
70 years, yeah.
And he said, guess what? And this is something very important because I know he loves you and I know he loves me. But he said, Peter, that you've been wasting your time for all these years.
Really?
And I'm wasting my time.
Well, why don't we do this? I mean, I think we are, because for one thing, here, there's this philosophy called existentialism, which essentially says that when you make choices, they act as universal choices. So you are acting in an ethical manner when you choose acts that that represent universal choices. In other words, if you choose peace, you're choosing peace for the entire world. And whether or not you're ever able to accomplish what we set out to,
mm-hmm.
you still act in the world as an ethical person. To do nothing in the face of war crimes, of theft of our national treasury by Bush et al., by the destruction of the, by saying nothing as the environment is destroyed, where everything that people have fought for over the years, for unions and Social Security and middle class life, to sit by and do nothing, even if there's only one of you or one of me, you're not. I don't think you're an ethical person then. I mean, if you hold those beliefs.
So, Peter, you feel, you know, oh, you really haven't wasted 40 years of your life. I just wanted to hang up at the phone, but it was my dad.
Tell him, wait, is he listening? Wes, I'm going to kick your ass.
No, he's not listening.
Okay.
I think he wants to kick your ass.
Well, tell him to come down. I mean, he's from Iowa. I'm from Detroit City. Hey, I got to get some other calls, Jalene.
All right, Peter.
All right, thanks for calling in from Miami. Jalene, and this is an easy one. We go from Jalene to Julin from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Is that right, Julin?
Julian.
Oh, Julian.
Yeah.
Sorry, Guy. Sorry.
I couldn't watch the coronation either. It made me want to vomit.
Yeah.
But basically what my concern is, I haven't heard much press covered about Cheney's saber-rattling about Iran. And
really?
What his latest thing is, that he is going to try and get Israel to do a first strike getting them involved. And that is kind of scary, since that's one of the main reasons that most of the Arabic states hate our guts.
Yeah, this would be an extraordinarily foolish move. But you have to understand, the only country that currently possesses weapons of mass destruction of any real substance is Israel, that has the capacity and the will to strike other nations with atomic weapons. And the reason that countries like Iran or even Iraq want weapons of mass destruction is always as a hedge against being attacked. Because if Iran had nuclear weapons, well, then Israel couldn't attack it. Right now, Israel could probably destroy Iran. So the only thing that would make sense for the United States would to demand a complete nuclear disarmament in the Middle East is to make that a nuclear free zone, and beginning with the nuclear disarmament of Israel. So this is all, I mean, I don't want anyone to have nuclear weapons, including Russia, including the United States and China and France and Pakistan and all the rest of these. But Bush is in many ways responsible for the maintenance of this nuclear arms race that's still going on. Bush is the most dangerous man in the whole world, without
a
doubt.
Huh? He's got Putin jumpy, and Putin's like, hey, we better develop some more stuff, because God knows what this guy's going to do.
That's right, and this is why he's dangerous. Putin, as you may remember, wanted to reduce the armaments of the U.S. and the Soviet Union from 10,000 down to 2,000, which is still way too many. And Bush said, no, we're not going to do it. We're going to... So this leaves Russia armed to the teeth. These guys in Washington are surrounded by a bunch of right-wing freaks, right, who probably are dreaming, like they did in Dr. Strangelove, of this nuclear exchange. But in the Soviet Union, they got wackos out there, too, that see the United States ultimately as the big enemy still of Russia. These Russian nationalists, these far right wing nationalists who think it should be a united Europe, including Russia, against the United States. And for George W. Bush to irresponsibly leave that many weapons in the hands of Russia is pure insanity. But most of what these guys do are pure insanity.
Did you happen? I can't remember. I think it was 60 Minutes or 48 Hours. One of those news programs. That in Siberia there is uncounted biological and other weapons that are just sat there unguarded for anybody to waltz up to and grab.
I'm sure. I mean, there's the concern of defeating terrorism. Bush has this now, this litany, and I hear it from all these right-wing callers whenever you listen to any talk station. It's better we fight them over in Iraq than here. That's not the real danger. I mean, we're playing into their hands, essentially, by this hideous war against Iraq. But the real dangers are exactly what you're saying, Julian. All right, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Let me take the call I was supposed to. It's Shannon from Clarkston. Shannon, it's Peter Werbe. Thanks for joining us. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for calling.
Good. I was at the inauguration, at the protesting.
Were you?
Yep. It was a great experience.
Had you ever been to a demonstration before?
No, I went to the John Kerry rally, but...
Yeah, nothing like actually a protest. What were you? I mean, I am kind of a veteran of them, so...
Right.
But, I mean, and that doesn't give me any special deal, but so it must have been an unusual experience, particularly with all that ultra security.
Yeah, we were... We waited a long time to get in. We were kind of crammed in between the bleachers.
Mm-hmm.
She said I heard her say that we were packed like animals, and it was kind of like sardines.
Yeah.
But the security wasn't, I mean, you waited a long time and you went in and they just kind of patted you down and stuff like that. It wasn't, I don't know. There were cops everywhere though. They were just lining the streets in like full armor and, It was ridiculous. It was just...
Yeah, and plus, it cost the American people tens of millions of dollars that couldn't have been said. They could have had a short walk, a few of their little balls with the rich people, and a quick oath administered
right.
by the Chief Justice. That's
right.
all they needed.
Well,
yeah.
That's kind of how I feel. I mean, it's not a new term. He's not a new president. During the Second World War, FDR just served like chicken salad and
yeah.
had a little party. And I think that would be so much more commendable than all this just ridiculous pomp and circumstance and display of wealth when, you know, so many people are dying.
You got it.
You know, and we going to Washington, I've been to Washington before, and you see the monuments and you think about people that have died for what they believe in for this country, and it's just like it's all gone down the crapper because
of
ignorance.
Would you go to another demonstration?
I would totally go. Huh. I went with Code Pink.
Oh, Code Pink.
Yeah.
That's an incredible group.
Yeah, it was great. They put us up in a place to stay, and, you know, it cost me like $150 total. It was great.
Oh, yeah. Madea Benjamin, I've interviewed her a number of times. She's the head of Code Pink.
Yeah, they have a link to your website on there.
They do?
Their website.
Well, good for Code Pink. They're a great bunch of ladies.
Yeah, it was fun. We dressed up in pink, and it was awesome. I had a pink wig.
Well, thank you so much, Shannon.
All right. Thanks, Peter.
I'll see you at the next demo. And by the way, if there actually was an opposition party, I don't think that would mean that there wouldn't be demonstrations, that we wouldn't come in the streets to make our views known as well. But there's always this marginalizing of demonstrations. Rather than, like I said, here this piece I read from the Times. For all their disgust with President Bush's inauguration, protesters could hardly have been happier. They screamed, they chanted. So we are put out as a sort of exotic fringe. In fact, almost evidence that we live in this democratic society, because we even let people out on the streets that scream and chant. Well, when you're denied any mass expression of sentiment, political views, to the left of Mussolini, if you will, and except for precious few points, although it's increasing. It's certainly increasing because at least half of us know the emperor wears no clothes, right? At least half of us know that. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werbe. This is Night Call. By the way, gas prices are up more than 5 cents a gallon, according to the Lundberg Report, and according to my neighborhood gas station. And I thought we were going to get all this oil. I don't think it's worked out that way. Here's Big Brady from Lake Orion. Big Brady, hi. It's Peter Werbe. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up, man? How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Yeah, I'm calling because a few months back, man, my friend, he had a nice little trip. He ate some shrooms, right? And he had an accident and burnt himself, right? And here's the thing that pisses me, man. The Oakland County Sheriff Department are trying to get him for a 20-year arson charge just because he torched himself. You know, I don't think that's right at all, man. He was in the privacy of his own home, you know, like, just because he was in an altered state of beautiful mind doesn't mean they have the right to charge him with arson, you know.
Did he start a fire?
No, just to himself. Like, he didn't burn down his house or nothing, you know, and, like, they're just trying to give him for an arson charge. He's got to go to court, like, February 29th, man. And
that's pretty weird. Does he hope he has a good lawyer?
Yeah, me too. Like, and they're saying a 20-year charge, you know, but, like, even with good time, man, it's at least 5 years or so. You know?
I guess. I mean, can't he just plead out to, like,
insanity or something?
To say, yeah, or disorderly conduct.
Yeah, it's something, man. It's outrageous, man.
It is. Has it been in the paper?
Yeah, actually, it was in the paper. I got the clipping on my bulletin board right here.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's crazy, man. The law and the systems are so twisted, man. By any chance, did you hear about the Oxford kid in Oxford who spit in the police officer's food?
No, but that's always a bad idea.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, wasn't you. That wasn't you.
No, definitely not me.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, okay. Keep me up to date about what happens. We'll be right back.
Your opinion matters. Call 313.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E, or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Drew is out ill and did one of the worst things you can do when in trouble. Leave us a message about it. Well, we had to compare a healthy Drew message with today's sick Drew message to see if we could hear a difference. Oh, boy.
It's Drew. Just wanted to lay this down in message form, requesting a day off next Friday as I am going to the World Series.
Wow.
Hey, Mike, it's Drew. I am sick as a dog. I feel like a truck hit me. Well, the Cubs are 5 outs away. I shouldn't speak so soon. But I've got a ticket to the Thursday night Cubs World Series game. This is next week. And I still feel like you want this. There's no way I can do this. I swear to God, I have never felt so sick in my life. I don't know what is wrong with me. But there's no way I can come in. So anyway, just wanted to drop that in ASAP. 5 outs too soon. I hope I don't jinx the Cubs. So I'll see you.
Oh.
Oh, I feel like and I'm going to call the friend Mike Clark next. Thanks.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Mike in the morning. Broadcast on the Riff.
101-101.
Riff.
Rock. Michigan winter. Bitter cold, snow, sleet, freezing rain, black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5.
How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City calling 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5. The Rift tradition continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you. From your home for Maui Time 2K5. 101 WRIF.
Make your request.
Win cool Rift gear.
And schmooze with the Hoobah.
It's your all-request Rift rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Motor City's one and only home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Rift.
Rock.
Twice.
Is nice.
We do for Tuesday on the Rift.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Two for Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock band.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Two for Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Two for Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
If it really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Sky.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101 WRIF. The Riff.
Had to, in some Democratic districts in Ohio, you had to wait up to 10 hours. In fact, the unavailability of voting machines, forgetting about whether these voting machines that are, you know, electronic ones that leave no paper trail are owned by Republicans, forgetting about all that, they just weren't even available to Democratic voters. Had everyone been able to vote to the extent that they wanted, George Bush would have lost Ohio and probably would have lost the race. Now, I wrote an Iraqi Chaldean friend of mine, and I asked the person. They actually said they didn't want to be identified in any manner. I wrote, are you voting in the Iraqi elections? What are your thoughts about you being able to and whether you are or aren't? This person was born in the United States. The Chaldeans were this persecuted Christian minority under Saddam Hussein. And here's what they write back. I'm very cynical and suspicious about the inclusion of Iraqi Americans in this Iraq vote. When have American-born citizens been allowed to vote outside this country on the basis of their father's birth status or father's citizenship? I believe this is a first. The ballot is in Arabic, so I do not. And so if I do not read Arabic, the only way I can vote is to know the referendum number, because there's numbers above the Arabic writing. Are passing the word, many, and she means in her community, about which number you should mark, which is the Christian ballot. In other words, they're going to, people within the Chaldean community are saying you vote for the Christians. I think that the Bush administration does not have support among Iraqis in Iraq, but it has some support here in the diaspora. That means the, you know, people that are outside of the home country. The diaspora, I guess, is probably the better way to pronounce it. This administration is using that leverage to sway the vote in Bush's direction. I tried to find out what the referendum is connected to the administration. I received the answer from a right-wing Chaldean that Bush does not support any referendum, just a free and democratic Iraq. They write, my friend writes, what a joke. I'm not going to participate in this farce, so no, I won't be voting. Like the elections in 2000 and 2004 here, there was manipulation at the polls. The ones in charge of securing the polls for Iraqis are supporters of the American invasion and want to keep the troops there as long as necessary. They would not allow a so-called democratic vote if they did not secure the outcome, didn't know the outcome. I'm looking forward to 2008. Unfortunately, I bet there will still be U.S. control of Iraq then. Mary Jo writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Perhaps this would be an unpopular question, but can Iraqis who are registered to vote for the upcoming Iraq election have also voted in the U.S. election for the American president? Well, it's an interesting concept. All right, let's see. Let's take some more calls. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Pete, this is Eric from Southgate, one of the, I believe, 10 polling Iraqi polling sites in America.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I had a few comments on the inaugural.
Sure,
and
please.
Inauguration. First off, did you notice Bush's and Cheney's eyebrows? They're looking like they want to kick somebody's ass, you know, when you put your eyebrows down.
Really?
Yeah. And you didn't watch it?
It just disgusted
me.
Yeah,
it irked you, I know.
Yeah.
I watch Fox News just so I can get more PO'd. But another thing, he didn't mention the domestic policy. You know, he just was all about spreading democracy around the world. It seems we should establish democracy in our own country before we start spreading it. And the third, there was an 1850s flag behind, you know, something I saw. And it looked a lot like the Israeli Star of David on a blue field,
I think. I didn't notice that. One of the things, I don't know whether this was just all set up, but somebody sent me this mailing for this website, which showed all of them giving the sign of the horns.
The Bush's daughter gave the Italian evil eye out, like they even know what it had the right to give that out. That's the way or turn negative energy on itself, you know.
Wow.
That's on Ronnie James Dio. That was a sign of the devil. In 1982, the Ron McCovey case that killed himself with a suicide solution.
Right.
And anyways, I just like to, first off, I got a solution to our problems.
Good, good.
As soon as we stop paying a dollar for a bottle of water,
yeah,
20 ounces of water, and start something like the French Revolution where everybody just stopped working and the people up on top fell, and the king of pants wet his pants right in the middle of a... Anyways, call your local state representatives, and whatever happened to Carl? Remember that guy?
Carl, that used to be on this show.
Well, he used to call up.
Yeah, well, he was an older man. I hope he's still with us.
Well, I think he'd have an answer or two.
He would.
And Pete, real quick, because it cost me a dollar, this call.
Uh-oh.
I stood 19 under a 100-foot, or one of them big 50-foot American flags, waving the single peace sign to Dan Quayle.
To Dan Quayle. Well, great. All right, Eric, thanks for calling us from Southgate. 313-298-WRF is our phone number out to Troy. And joining us is Ruth. Ruth, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you for taking my call, Peter. I was telling the young man that I didn't turn my TV on all day, but Air America has come to...
Wait. I don't think we want to talk about other...
I asked him. He said I could because that's the only thing that saved me, you know?
Well, that's good. But Ruth, I don't, you know, this we're in a very competitive...
Okay, I won't do it then. I won't do it, but...
Okay.
That's all. Oh, I'll ask you this. Did you hear about Rumsfeld had to cancel his trip to Germany?
How come?
Well, it seems they have a warrant for his arrest, war criminal. And he's supposed to go February to this terrorist thing, you know, this briefing on it, and he had to cancel the trip.
Really? Well, you know, he has, he's of German extraction, and has relatives there, and his relatives are, they say they're ashamed of him because of his policies in Iraq.
Well, it's a similar organization here that's taken out the charges, you know, late charges. But he was warned of it. He called and told them that he wouldn't come unless they dropped it.
Wow. Well, that's something. Ruth, thanks for joining us. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. And here's Elliot in Mount Clemens. Elliot, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Peter. I was at a protest last Monday on Martin Luther King Day. And I had a giant sign that said, what part of thou shalt not kill don't you understand?
Hmm. Where were you demonstrating?
It was, we went to downtown Detroit, starting on the First Methodist Church on Woodward and went down.
Oh, I was there. I was there, too. Yeah, sure. Sure.
Oh, great. Wow, I didn't see you in the crowd.
I didn't see you either.
I wouldn't even know what you look like from radio, though, you know?
You got to go to my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E. There's a nice little photograph of me.
Great.
says I. Although someone wrote me, he said, you are so ugly. Oh, well, I do the best I can. I mean, I can't help that part of it.
Hey,
yeah, it is United Central Methodist Church is actually the name of it. Ed Rowe is the minister, and he was introducing many of the people, including John Conyers Jr., who gave an excellent speech. Are you with me?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I'm here. Hey, I just wanted to say, though, you know, the Republicans seem to have created an illusion in America that they're the party of morals and we're not. And it's really interesting that a lot of them seem to have ignored the Bible. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there. For example, Isaiah 2:4, it says that nations shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks, and nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall learn war anymore.
Well, I like that. I like the lyricism of it. But unfortunately, you can go to the Bible, and it talks about smiting your enemies as well. It's a pretty ambivalent document. Slave owners used it to justify slavery in the United States. And the abolitionists took other parts and said, here, see, this is where it says you can't own slaves. Thank you, Elliot. Thanks for calling. 313-298-WRIF. You want to email, call talkyes@yahoo.com. And, these right-wingers are such fakes, and they're always trying to come across as so moral and so sanctimonious. Mel Gibson was trying to beat the town where he's got this enormous 28-room mansion on 75 acres out of $10,000. He's got a $17.7 million estate, and he was trying to fake that his grounds were a working farm. I mean, he pays $170,000 a year in taxes. Is this right? $137,000. He's trying to scam out of $10,000 here's what the town assessor said. Anyone can have a few pigs in their backyard, but a viable farm is more than having something for personal use. It's about producing a viable product. Gibson's Passion of the Christ took in $370 million. They're like small. You know, that's it. They're just small. And some more of these right-wing Christian wackos. Have you seen this? It must be, because someone told me that Saturday Night Live even had a skit about this. But, you know, SpongeBob SquarePants, that cartoon figure, well, the creators had him in a video that called for tolerance. Well, of course, the intolerant Christian right, people like James Dobson, founder of Focus on the Family, started wondering, was SpongeBob SquarePants trying to promote the homosexual agenda? That's the way they say it. They don't say homosexual. They say homosexual. There's something about, I don't know what it is. We've talked about this before. I'll say this more than once. I've said it before. But if you start looking about where is the homosexual agenda, I've often wondered this myself. You know where it says homo milk? I wonder if these people go in stores and say, we have a bottle of homo milk. Right? I mean, why do they say that? Everything's homogenized. Anyway, all right, I've said that before. Paul Batura, who's assistant to Dobson, said that we see the video as an insidious means by which the organization is manipulating and potentially brainwashing kids. So, in other words, according to these good Christians, that if you preach tolerance of all different kind of people in this world, this heterogeneous as opposed to homogeneous, that's what they want. They want a homogeneous world made up of white people I mean, think how far from reality they are, given the numbers in the world. They want a white world. They want it. What do we always say? What is it? White and green. You know, white people, green lawns out there in the suburbs. Everyone is heterosexual and on and on and on. Well, get real, dude. That ain't the way it works. And you know what? It's pretty cool that it doesn't work like that. Also, this is the 32nd anniversary, or at least what day was this, of Roe v. Wade, where, gee, what a concept. The Supreme Court held that a woman's body and what happens with it in terms of decisions about reproduction, think about this as a concept, is no business of the government, but rather that of the individual woman and her doctor. And people I know, some Christians that are tolerant Christians who oppose abortion, are saddened sometimes when they hear about abortions occurring. And two things. They would either try gentle persuasion and some realistic alternative. They do not want the intervention of the police into women's reproductive rights. Or, more importantly, the Christians I know, the tolerant and generous ones, the ones in the peace and social justice movement, know that there are so many abortions in this country and so many abortions in the world, legal and illegal, because of poverty. And that poverty only exists because the insistence of the people that have hogged the world's resources and wealth continue to do so. And that if we created a world that is possible today, where there's not starvation, where there's not mass disease, where there's not wars, that we lived in the type of utopia that is possible on Earth now, not some dream, not some crazy scheme or anything like that, but given the resources we have, it's possible right now that women would probably tend to have, I don't know what, 70-80% less abortions. The Pope, in the meantime, wants to go in the other way. He has stressed that the Roman Catholic Church believes that abstinence and fidelity within marriage and not condoms are the best way to stop the spread of HIV. So with this pronouncement, he probably condemns millions of people more to HIV, because the people that are transmitting HIV in Africa and Asia and Latin America are in fact often within marriage. And the church opposes condoms, but it says promoting use of condoms to fight the spread of AIDS fosters what it sees as immoral and hedonistic lifestyles and behavior that only contribute to its spread. Again, this moralistic, sanctimonious condemnation of people, and essentially with their mean-spirited view of life and sexuality. I'm all for lust, by the way. Let's have a lusty life, if you choose. I mean, you don't want to have a lusty life, don't. I don't care. But I'm saying I'm all for lust. I'm all for hedonism. And I guess they would call that immoral. I'm not saying that we should do it and victimize people or hurt people's feelings or make a disruptive community. But within a community, within consenting adults, let's hear it for hedonism. Let's hear it for lust, huh? And if you don't want to do it, okay. But you know what? Leave the rest of us alone. Get your damn laws off of all of our backs. Get your church out of our lives, unless people choose to. If they want to say, okay, you know, I'm all for that. I want to be within this spiritual little grouping where the church controls their concept of my body and my sexuality. I don't know if it's cool by me, but I'm not gonna do anything. I'm not gonna pass a law to stop you. I'm not going to demand a law that has you do what I want you to do. So we get back to the thing about authoritarian personalities, aren't we? Actually, we're back to the spot where they say, in very corny terms at radio, we're going to pay a few bills and be right back with your calls.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye, or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Kambati himself at each visit.
The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today, like every other day, for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Kambati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Kambati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Michigan winter, bitter cold, snow, sleet, freezing rain, black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5. How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City caller 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that. You could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5. The Rift tradition continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this Bud's for you. From your home for Maui Time 2K5, 101 WRIF.
Chance to take control of the WRIF playlist
with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
The Riff's
Wednesdays, all request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown, the big unit. Weekday nights at 9 on 101 WRIF, Detroit's rock station.
Rock station. Rock station. Rock station. Rock station. Rock station. Rock station. Rock station.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We relived an unfortunate encounter we had with Santa Claus from a few years back. We learned he wasn't wearing the required Santa outfit in its entirety. It was disgusting.
Do you wear the big black belt?
I have a big black belt, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, you're just...
I don't wear it continuously.
But when you're going to schools and stuff, surely you've got the black belt on and everything, right?
Well, it's not really necessary. They recognize me.
Oh, man, what do you show up in, jeans or something? I mean...
Santa, you can't be in civilian clothes when you're Santa Claus.
I can't?
No,
you can't
never.
Just waltz in there with a T-shirt, with a pack of Marlboros in the pocket, and some jeans,
and
boots.
I don't do that.
No? No.
I try to answer all the letters. I usually enclose a picture.
Uh-huh.
Santa Claus.
With the hat on?
Knows me... I think one or two of them has a hat on.
All right.
I'm not too sure your dipstick's touching all, but...
He sends them in the nude.
Yeah, maybe I'm a couple bricks short of a load, Santa.
Yeah, your elevator don't go to the top.
Yeah, that's my kind of Santa. Just rips people.
Stick your Christmas off your ass.
Stop it!
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program.
On the Riff.
Riff. 101-101.
W-R-I-F.
Riff.
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 And now, The Riff presents this Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment. Thank you. This Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment has been brought to you by 101 WRIF. This station rocks.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday
for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can.
Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Riff all day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101 The Riff.
Bush has put into office all of these representatives of polluters. I mean, that's who was at his inauguration. That's who gave the tens of millions of dollars because they knew they were going to get it back double and triple. The polluters, the exploiters, the environmental destroyers, all of that. I mean, it was a shameful gathering. And the fact that it could be put together with the trappings of patriotism and the American spirit and a commitment to democracy, the biggest fraud and hypocrisy of all, is really disgusting to me. All right, thank you very much. Thanks for making our program international. Let's see, from Inkster, here's Al. Al, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I heard Bush's inaugural address saying he was going to promote freedom and end tyranny, and for a minute there, my heart leapt up going, he's resigning.
Well, there you go.
Friday afternoon, I was at a protest where there was a solid line of people, 3 to 5 deep, that stretched from Dearborn Henry Ford Centennial Library to Ford Motor World headquarters.
Yeah, what was it for?
It was UAW and various other unions that were protesting the closing of the Wixom plant.
The Wixom plant is closing?
The Wixom plant is closing. Nobody's heard about it.
I just drove by
closing
it.
And moving to Mexico. It's that giant sucking sound Ross Perot promised us.
Wow. Yeah, I was just went cross-country skiing out at the Wixom Recreation Area, and I'm not going there to put together cars, but I've seen it enough times having gone by it. Well, you guys got to tell me about this stuff. I never heard anything about it.
It wasn't on the media.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There was a camera crew there from Fox News.
Yeah.
Ray, but it didn't make none of the newspapers. It didn't make a blip. And I mean, I'm talking there must have been 600 to 800 people there, a solid line that stretched almost a quarter mile.
I can imagine. I forgot. One of these days, or one of these Sundays, I had brought a Detroit News just talking about the hit, the continuing hit that Michigan takes for industrial jobs leaving the country, and also that the Michigan unemployment rate is way above the national average.
You know, what I have to say is, you know, having marched through Dearborn with women in black, we had half the cops there with, you know, almost three times as many people. So I guess women and peace activists scare the hell out of Dearborn, and angry auto workers don't.
I guess not. All right, thanks for joining us, Al. I appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Josh in Westland. Hi, Josh.
Hey, how are you doing, Peter?
Doing good.
That's good to hear. I'd just like to thank you for, you know, putting out a great show,
a great talk show.
I wish there were more people like you. I'd just like to say that, you know, I'm from the working class, and we are the backbone of America.
Absolutely.
And I think the only thing we can do is to shock the business machine. I mean, and the only way we can do that nonviolently is to, you know, tomorrow, just not go to work.
Well,
don't buy anything.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly in the past have been all sorts of calls. In fact, Thursday, the inauguration day, was supposed to be a don't buy, don't work day, but I don't think it ever got any real traction. And certainly in other countries, there's been general strikes where the whole all workers stopped working for a period of time. And there, in the 1930s, there was a general strike in Toledo. There was one in San Francisco. And that was when workers and unions were really worthy of the name. They stood up to the employers and the exploiters.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't think of any other way that we can do that. If you have any suggestions, I'd really like to hear it.
Well, the suggestions, in some ways, aren't really what's necessary, because you just made a suggestion, Josh, for what people could do to stop. I mean, the companies do what they can. They raise the prices. They destroy our jobs. They destroy our communities because of the destruction of good-paying jobs. And nothing happens to them. There's nothing that they don't. The people that work there are angry, sad, and wind up with jobs paying half of what they previously made. But nothing. There's no consequences to them. And until the people of the United States can extract some consequences from the people that are doing our nation such damage, well, things aren't going to just go on like this. I mean, Al from Inkster just called in. And he said there was a demonstration of 600 or 700 people. And you think, wow, 600 or 700 people, that's a lot. I mean, given what the closing of the Wixom plant is going to do, why there's not 75,000 people
right
out there is way beyond me. I mean, well, one of the reasons is communication. I didn't even know about it, and I don't think anybody else in my union, the Broadcasters Union, knew anything about it. Did I just blow you off? Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. Josh, if you're listening, I hope you're listening. My apologies to you. I gotta keep. No, we're doing it by a mouse now. You know, we got everything is digital. I'm looking at a screen here. Let me see. I wanted to read this. There's an interesting website, democraticunderground.com, talking about Bush. Where's the block-long line of pundits ready to slam Mrs. Bush for this extravagant display? Turns out that the First Lady got herself a $700 haircut for the inauguration. And you know what? That's just wretched excess. If you bid your services up, so you're maybe the best, for instance. I mean, like I pay $22 for my haircut. And I probably could get it done for $12 or $14, but this woman does my hair the way I want. If you go to Saks, I think it's like $75. That's an extravagance to me. But people, you know, the men and women who cut there are really good. $700, you're just doing that because you're filthy rich. What's his name? Thorstein Veblen, V-E-B-L-E-N, talked about the wealthy class, the plutocracy. We were mentioning that word earlier. The plutocracy, they've involved themselves in conspicuous consumption. because you and I, we consume things. We want toys. We want this. We want that for our houses, for our own enjoyment. One of the aspects of the rulers is they want to be seen with the trappings of rule. So they get $700 haircuts, for instance. Okay, let's take another call. Here's Ryan from Clarkston. Ryan, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Yeah, I enjoy listening to your show very much.
Well, thank you.
I just wanted to bring up the, I know it's a pretty hot-button issue, but the abortion issue, especially with the March for Life coming up in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering if you heard about the lady who the Roe vs. Wade revolved around. She just recently came out actually against abortion, given like all the technology that we have now. And at the time, they didn't have when Roe vs. Wade went through.
Well, you know, there's any number of people that the compulsory pregnancy movement, as I call it, brings up. Women who have had abortions in the past that now say they wish they never had, and they're really sorry that they have. And, well, I mean, I guess that's their problem, and I feel badly for them. A lot of times people do things in their youth or whatever, and then they say, gee, I wish I hadn't have done that. Well, who knows what the consequences would have been if they wouldn't have had abortions. But there's no reason to bring the intervention of overwhelmingly male legislatures and overwhelmingly male police into women's reproductive rights.
Well, I was just thinking, like...
Yeah, by the way, let me say, you're right, though. The woman who, I can't remember her name, but who was Roe in Roe v. Wade, now is a spokesperson for the compulsory pregnancy movement.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just thinking that, like, a lot of the women that do have abortions, it's because a lot of times men actually, I wouldn't say force, but persist.
Pressure. Pressure them.
Pressure them into having abortions. And
what percentage do you think that represents?
I don't know percentages, but...
Well, maybe, in other words, you have no idea, and neither do I. Might be 17%, might be 1%. Right?
Yeah.
But I don't know where you're going with this. I mean, so you have this information that the woman who was Roe and Roe v. Wade, and like women who are in many ways still subordinate to men in many circumstances and have less power, and even in interpersonal stuff, may be pressured to do something that they don't want to. So do you think then there should be a law which forbids all women, in other words, that women are, it is compulsory for women then to carry babies to term whether they want to or not?
Well, I was just kind of wondering if you thought that, like, this woman coming out would kind of bring out a change in the American people at all, or do you think we're heading in the direction where abortion would become illegal again, or...
Well, we certainly are. I mean, and we would again, as we have so many other times before, particularly under Bush, but in other ways as well, just be a disgrace among the industrial nations of the world, where every other country in the world where abortion is legal. I mean, isn't even now in Ireland and Italy, these Catholic countries? I think so. But we would then, if it's not legal not yet in Ireland and in Italy, that would give evidence that it is only illegal in theocracies. And as I said earlier, when you conjoin religion and the state, you have a terrible state of affairs, a corrupt church and a sanctimonious political state. All right, thank you very much, Ryan. Appreciate your call. By the way, and I was mentioning earlier about the Pope saying, no condoms, don't have sex. No one commented on that. I said it was all for lust and hedonism. But here's the direction we're going in. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin the Fixer, that's what I call him. That's what other people call him. I didn't invent that one. Antonin the Fixer Scalia, he's Bush's buddy. And the Bush family buddy, and so he was, you know, one of the people that installed Bush as the president back in 2000. Remember that they had dinner, Antonin and Bush and the two couples, the wives of Scalia and Bush, and these guys are shameless. So the fix is in. Bush is installed by his father's friends, right? And he wins in a disputed election in his brother's state. I mean, if this happened in any other country in the world, we would be wanting to call in the UN to have a second election, right? Anyways, they have dinner together just like a month after, and they're so shameless. They know what weasels the American people are. I mean, all of us. Because the fact that we didn't go Ukraine on Bush in 2000 opened the door for every excess, every lie, every destruction of American principles that we've seen since then. Because we didn't send millions of people out into the streets saying, Bush, you stole the 2000 election, install the rightful winner, Al Gore. They knew they could get away with anything. They know they can repeal 400 environmental rules that the polluters want out. They know they can give away the economy to the wealthy. They know they can any number of things. What? Raise the prices of our drugs and on and on and on. Raise our gasoline prices. Get us into a war based on lies and then say, oh, well, no, it's not. Anyways, so Scalia. And then he hangs out with his buddy Dick Cheney right before the Supreme Court is going to make a decision about Cheney having meetings about energy in secret, of course with Enron. That's why they wanted to keep it secret. But before this just goes on endlessly about the crimes of Antonin Scalia, why this guy's impeached is way beyond me. Anyways, he was in Baton Rouge to address the Knights of Columbus Council. And he didn't charge a fee this time, and he told the largely Catholic crowd of 350 at the Holiday Inn that there's nothing wrong with, quote, traditional Christianity. I mean, it's his opinion. Who cares? He says, to believe in traditional Christianity is something else. For the Son of God to be born of a virgin, I mean, really, to believe that he rose from the dead and bodily ascended into heaven, how utterly ridiculous, and he's being facetious here, to believe in miracles or that those who obey God will rise from the dead and those who do not will burn in hell. God assumed, says Justice Scalia, from the beginning, that the wise of the world would view Christians as fools, and he has not been disappointed. That he says, we are fools for Christ. He praised traditional Catholics who say the rosary, go on pilgrimages, kneel during the Eucharist, and follow religiously the teachings of the Pope. So this is the man that is going to be making law, not on the basis of 200 years of jurisprudence. In fact, going back much farther than that. You know, it's ultimately based our system in England. So the English-American judicial system and all the precedents. He's going to be ruling on his personal religious faith as dictated by the Pope in Rome. This is the man who is going to be voting whether or not a woman can have the right to her own reproductive rights. Right? Whew. People, we're in trouble. And we're in trouble because these nutballs, these fascists, get a free rein and we don't do anything. Fascist in the sense that they are anti-democratic, not big D, small d. They don't want a democratic society. They want the elite and powerful to run our lives. They want to run women's lives. They want to run the middle class, the lives of the middle class and the working class. They want to rob us blind, and when they see we do nothing to protest, they say, what the hell? Yeah, this has got to be, we don't need any concentration camps here. We don't need any brown shirts or black shirts. We don't need goon squads of fascists going up and beating up labor leaders and socialists and communists and liberals. They don't do anything. A few of them do. Werby gets on the air. You know, maybe 100 people come out to a demonstration. 600 workers come out to protest the closing of a plant. That's nothing. They're destroying the environment at the behest of the polluters. Repealing 400 government regulations without even any oversight from Congress to destroy our environment all the more, and we don't even know about it. Okay, all right. Hey, I had a nice day cross-country skiing today. It was beautiful. I don't want people to think, someone said, do you ever have any fun? I have lots of fun. As I said earlier, that's because I believe in lust and hedonism. All right, call me up. Peter Werby here with you, 313-298-WRIF. Emails to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. My website, Peter Werby, WERBE.com. And if you want to get on a chat line, go to TomHartmann.com. TomHartmann.com. You can go in the chat room. You got to sign up a couple times, but be on there with a lot of really nice people. All right, here is Chris in Ann Arbor. Chris, it's Peter Werby. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I just wanted to share a joke with you tonight.
A joke?
Yeah.
Is it something that I won't lose my job for?
Yes. No. It's pretty decent.
Okay.
Me and my Democratic friends were having a hard time dealing with this Bush thing, so we made up a joke. Starts out, a guy goes into a pet shop looking for a stuffed rat. He asks for the rat, and he says, "Can I have this rat?" And the owner says, "You could, yes, but there's a story that goes with it." And the guy's in a hurry, so he says, "No, I don't want the story. Just give me the rat." So he walks around town with this rat, and all these rats start to follow him. He chases it to the edge of the town, and he throws it in the lake, and all these rats go in the lake and drown. He runs back to the pet shop, and the guy's like, "So you want to hear the story now?" And he's like, "No, give me a Republican." And so, that's basically it.
That's the joke.
Yeah.
Okay, Chris, what can I give you some advice?
Yeah.
Keep your day job. All right. Bye-bye. I'm not even sure I got that one. Here's Rich calling in from Boulder, Colorado. Hi, Rich. Are you the fellow that used to live here in Detroit and emails me once in a while?
Yeah, I grew up in Wayne.
Wayne. Okay.
Yeah, I was actually calling to respond to Josh about what we can do.
Sure.
And also to make some comments, too. I was just wondering, this issue of what we can do. And I know the auto show happened a couple of weeks ago or last week.
Still going on, I think, yeah.
I'm curious how many people are there protesting that.
Why would they protest the auto show? Well, people have protested the auto show.
Well, if I was living there, I would be there protesting because, you know, why do we gather each year at the Detroit Auto Show to worship our demise? We just went to a war in Iraq. We killed tens of thousands of people, and then we go to worship it. But not only that, it destroys the environment. There's plenty of health complications that go along with the automobiles, like the obesity epidemic, diabetes epidemic. Me myself, I'm an asthmatic. And so on.
Well, Rich, don't come back to Detroit. We are 237 times over the pollution limit as set by the government.
Yeah, and here in Boulder, the air is a lot cleaner. And I've been car-free for 8 years now.
Really?
And that's when I moved from Wayne out to here and made a conscious decision. You know, I don't want to support wars. I don't want to support environmental destruction. I want to live a healthy lifestyle. And to me, it seems central to so many issues. So many wrongs in the world are centered around the automobile.
Mm-hmm.
Sprawl, rampant consumerism, social dysfunction, et cetera.
Destruction of communities and all that. But you know what? My wife and I, we talk about this. We have two cars. We're two people. We don't even have any kids. We each have a car. And once in a while, we think, can we do with one car? And given the way Detroit is spread out, there's no way in the world that we could do with one car, for instance, let alone no car.
Well, I have to say, every city in the country and probably the world has a master transportation plan, which is a 20 to 25 year projection of projects that involve transportation. And here in Boulder, when I moved out here, I got involved with a group called the Boulder Bicycle Commuters. And we work with city council and community members and we, bike riders and see what can we do to make it better to get around by bicycle.
Yeah.
And Boulder is one of the best places in the country to do so. But that is, that's 30 years of citizen involvement.
Well, there's absolutely no plan for the Detroit area. And bicycles do, in many ways, pose some problems. I mean, a lot of older people can't use them, although bicycling keeps you in better shape and you could do it longer. I mean, what we really need are a lot of decentralized communities rather than these huge megaplexes, which are only getting bigger and bigger, so that we could walk to work and walk to where we play and There is virtually nowhere that I can easily walk to where I live. There's virtually nowhere that I could easily walk to, and I walk sometimes 3 and 4 miles a day.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm a big walker, and I used to be a big cyclist.
I just really think that if we as progressives that want to see this change in the world, it's not going to happen if, like Josh suggested, not going to work. That's not going to do anything. But maybe if you rode your bike to work, that would start doing something. And, I think, single occupancy vehicles are not a sustainable way. And if there's, the power source is hybrid or a biodiesel,
mm-hmm.
There's still all these other issues related to it. And, and it gets into corporate power with the auto industries and the insurance and so on.
Yeah, in many ways, the automobile is the central commodity of modern society. And I would say that the internal combustion engine has been a monstrosity, as you said. That's been, that's increased the capacity for killing millions of people in wars. The pollution, the deaths alone from cars are amazing. But right now, we are stuck in a society that is dependent upon the car, and I'm dependent upon the car. And I think it's good when people start thinking of alternatives where people, for their health and for the health of the planet, ride bikes. Maybe I'm old school, though, but I guess I would still put more faith in a general strike, although it doesn't look like it's on the agenda. Rich, I got to move on. Thanks for joining us.
One last comment?
Sure.
Yeah, and I just want to say, if you want to make a positive future, live close to your work so you can ride it. Make it your life possible to live by bike, and it is possible. And we're going to see some real positive stuff if folks do that.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. This is Bill from Detroit. Bill, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to know what you think is the most important issue in this country that we should focus on.
Can you turn your radio off?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Turn it off?
Yeah.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting way to put it. I don't know if you can put them in a rank order. This is, Iraq is number one, the economy is number two, because ultimately, they're all linked. They're all linked in together.
Uh-huh.
Don't you think?
I mean, I would like to know how much you think racism plays a part in that.
No, that's a part of the puzzle. Yeah.
I heard you talking about that earlier about the Chinese. It's not just black people. It's disabled people. It's Chinese, whatever. What I'm saying? It's coming together, and I think trying to help different groups of people. That's what I think the focus should be on, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, and that comes out. And see, then again, that's the two views of the world. I think people, and I don't even want to put a label on them, but there's some of us that are tolerant and generous of spirit, and there's others that whose politics are rooted in narrowness and mean-spiritedness, and that's the real division here. Because if the generous and tolerant people ran the world rather than
like me and you,
I don't know how to run the world, but our values dominate. That's a better way to do it. Rather than the values of greed and destruction, what have you. We wouldn't be in better shape. We'd be in good shape. So yeah.
I agree with you. I just think America needs to wake up. And if you don't want to come together, then it's all going to go. I mean, you're going to lose some good people that maybe could have contributed to a better community or whatnot.
Sure.
What I'm saying?
Well, thank you, Bill. That's a good sentiment, one I agree with. All right, we come back. Where is our money going? Where is our money not going?
This is the Riff Award-winning Night Call.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some of blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E, or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Drew was out ill and did one of the worst things you can do when in trouble. Leave us a message about it. Well, we had to compare a healthy Drew message with today's sick Drew message to see if we could hear a difference. Oh, boy.
It's Drew. Just wanted to lay this down in message form, requesting a day off next Friday as I am going to the World Series.
Wow.
Hey, Mike, it's Drew. I am sick as a dog. I feel like a truck hit me. Well, the Cubs are 5 outs away. I shouldn't speak so soon. But I've got a ticket to the Thursday night Cubs World Series game. This is next week. And I don't feel like you want this. There's no way I can do it. I swear to God, I've never felt so sick in my life. I don't know what is wrong with me. But there's no way I can come in. So anyway, just wanted to drop that in ASAP. That's 5 outs too soon. I hope I don't jinx the Cubs. We'll see you.
Oh,
I feel like and I'm going to call the phone back to Nick. Thanks.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Yes. The broadcast program. On the Riff.
101-101.
Riff.
Rock. Michigan winter. Bitter cold, snow, sleet, freezing rain, black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present
Maui Time 2K5.
How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the Poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City, call it 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5. The Rift tradition continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this Bud's for you. From your home for Maui Time 2K5. 101 WRIF.
Make your requests.
Win cool Rift gear.
And schmooze with the Poobah.
It's your all-request Rift rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Rift.
Rift. Rocks.
Twice.
Is nice.
You do for Tuesday on the Rift.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock band.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it, know it, live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
It really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's a riff.
Your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Scott.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101 WRIF. The Riff.
Yearly lease on this luxury SUV, because Kilpatrick had just announced that he was cutting the jobs of hundreds of people and eliminating city cars because of this $231 million deficit next year. Well, forgetting about Kwame's little indiscretions, and I stress little, and I'll tell you why in a second. Here on the front page of the joint Detroit News and Free Press today, it says, police cuts hurt safety in suburbs. Cash-strapped cities drop officers and services, even consider combining forces. Several Metro Detroit police departments are taking longer to investigate nonviolent crimes, are slow to arrive at minor accidents, and are cutting prevention in other units because money woes have led to fewer available officers. So we live in the richest country in the world, and I think it's convenient for a lot of people, I don't want to get too deep into this, to tisk about Detroit, partly to say, well, the people there deserve what they get, you know, because the mayor wants to, you know, to scam a big luxury car for his family. But it's not just that. It's throughout our country, the wealthiest country in the world, us paying the taxes that we do. And essentially, and this was, how do you say her name, Gregoire? Is that it? Democrat Christine Gregoire, the new governor of Washington. Well, the Republicans are just screaming bloody murder. She, you know, even though she won by 29 votes, blah, 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 blah. Anyway. So what's Bush going to do? We're spending billions, tens of billions now, up to the hundreds of billions. I think it's about $200 billion, depending on you, how you count it. Let's say it's between $150 and $200 billion, depending on how you slice the war in Iraq. Now, much of it is just going to Cheney's and Bush's buddies, right? They destroyed it. They got paid to destroy Iraq. Now they're getting paid to rebuild it. But so what's Bush going to do? Here, this says, Bush to see cuts in Medicaid. In the benefits. So the poor people who don't vote, usually, or the much, much lower percentage of voters among the poor, and when they do, they tend to vote Democratic. So the hell with them. Yeah, the richest country in the world, every other decent industrial country in the world has a national health program that everybody gets as a right of citizenship. Because in decent countries, this not being one of them, people take care of one another. They're not thrown to the wolves. They when they're too poor to afford insurance or rent or heat for their house, they don't get thrown out. And here's what, after two straight record federal deficits, thanks to Bush, that doesn't say that, I said that, that peaked at $412 billion last year, many Republicans are eager to constrain government spending by curbing the growth of benefits. So if we pay taxes, good portions of which go to Halliburton and these weapons companies and what have you, but the poor, the hell with them. As a matter of fact, the U.S. has fallen out of the index of economic freedom's top 10. For the first time ever, the U.S. does not rank among the world's top 10 freest economies in the Index of Economic Freedom, according to the Heritage Foundation and the Wall Street Journal. These are right-wingers, even by them. All right, so where that, so our money is not going, our money is not going to help our own citizens and ourselves. It's not going to pay for our police forces. It's not going for our poor. Whole other question, why do we have poor in the richest country in the world? That's another question. All right, here's where part of it is going. This, and there's some discrepancy about the money. But in from Baghdad, January 22nd, earlier this month, according to Iraqi officials, $300 million in American bills was taken out of Iraq's central bank, put into boxes, and quietly put on a chartered jet bound for Lebanon. According to the Associated Press, the Iraqi Defense Ministry transferred hundreds of millions of dollars from the Iraqi Central Bank to a financial institution in Beirut to buy weapons. The official, speaking on the condition of anonymity, was responding to allegations by prominent Iraqi politician Ahmed Chalabi, who demanded an investigation into a decision by Defense Minister Hazim Shalan to shift $500 million in cash to a bank account in Beirut. Now, where did they get $500 million in cash from? Well, they got it from you and me. And that means if you voted for George W. Bush, you voted to make this okay. And you contributed, along with mine and everyone else listening, a little portion of the taxes. Of course, $500 million is absolutely nothing compared to the $200 billion that has already been wasted. Now, where do they get cash? Here's where they get cash. The United States sends in huge cargo planes enormous containers of American cash to send to Iraq. So they're sending hundreds of millions of dollars of our tax dollars in cash of crisp, brand-new $100 bills, $50 bills over to Iraq. Part of it, of course, we've reported on that before. They're just passed out by American troops, kind of like little leaflets. Hey, why don't you like us? Here's $100. Here's a $20 bill. You like us now? You know, even though we invaded your country and we're killing all your people and destroying your cities, here's cash. Love us. Yeah, all right. So we're buying the hearts and minds, although as we see, it doesn't work very well. So is that, or is this a lie, or is it okay? This is what I always want to ask conservatives and people dumb enough to have voted for George W. Bush. Is this okay that we just have 500? I mean, there's billions of dollars of U.S. cash over there, and they hand it out. We're paying everybody there. The jobs from the Wixom Ford plant are going to Mexico, and we're paying people, the United States government is paying people in Iraq their salaries. They're paying ordinary citizens. They're paying the police. They're paying the National Guard. All right, one more quick thing. Where's our money going? In this whole faith-based initiative where Bush is destroying the Founding Fathers' demand for separation of church and state. So why are they doing this? It's not like all of these Republicans are suddenly love poor people and love minorities, particularly African Americans. Great numbers of them don't like them at all. And you just got to barely look a little bit below the surface, and you get this racism. I mean, tons of racist groups are part of the Republican Party. Here's why Bush is giving money to poor black inner-city churches. Bishop Sedgwick Daniels, one of this city's most prominent black pastors, supported Democrats in past presidential elections, including Clinton Gore. This fall, however, the bishop's broad face appeared on Republican Party flyers in the battleground state of Wisconsin. This is pretty easy to figure out even before I get to it, right? He endorsed President Bush as the candidate who shares our views, quotes, shares our views. What changed? After Bush's contested 2000 election victory, gee, that's amazing to even say that, Reverend Daniels felt the pull of a most powerful worldly force, a call from the White House. He conferred with top administration officials and had a visit in 2002 from the president himself. His church later received $1.5 million funds in federal funds. Who pays for it? You, me, the rest of us, everyone listening, depending on, or regardless of political affiliation, through Bush's initiative to support faith-based social services. So here is another one of these scumbag Republican schemes paid for by you and me to destroy the base of the Democratic Party and to buy votes just like these old pork barrels in the South, where the politicians would roll out a big barrel of pork and say, y'all vote for so-and-so, and just grab some pork. Daniel's political conversion, the Reverend, and similar transformations by black pastors across the nation form a little-known chapter in the playbook of Bush's 2004 reelection campaign and may mark the beginning of a political realignment long sought by senior White House advisor Karl Rove and the GOP strategist. So, you see, they don't have to get, 50% of union votes or 50% of black votes or anything like that. These elections, as we see, are decided by a couple of percentage points at best. So if they can shave a percentage point or two, spending and buying those votes by virtue of handing over federal money to buy the votes, well, that's a good investment for them, particularly, right, since it ain't their money. It's your money and my money. So, as I say at least once a program, we are not ruled by a government. We are ruled by a racket, pure and simple. Here's James in Troy, Michigan. Thanks for joining us. It's Peter Werbe. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. I just wanted to say, first off, I pay $10 for a haircut, which leaves me roughly $690 to pump back into the city of Detroit. And secondly, I just wanted to thank you so much for coming out to the Bands Against Bush benefit back in September at Detroit Rock City.
Glad to do it. So you think I'm paying too much for my haircuts?
Yeah, it's a little much. I pay $10 and my hair looks just fine.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm paying too much. I'm willing to pay $10. Sheila, if you're listening, I'll still be there on Wednesday. But, I'm willing to, I don't get that many haircuts. I'm an old long hair that really barely gets my hair cut. It is now. It's pretty short now. But
it's definitely not worth $700, I'll tell you that.
Not like Laura Bush had. Well, let me see. If I get, I might get 6 haircuts a year. So that's $132 a year as opposed to, I'm for it. I won't say anything to Sheila, though, so don't tell her if you, All right?
All right. Take it easy, man.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye now. Pardon me. Let's see. Do we have another caller to take? Yes, indeed we do. It's Brandon from Sterling Heights. Brandon, hi. It's Peter Werbe, and you're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How you doing? Great show, man.
Thank you. How much do you pay? How much do you pay for haircuts?
$10 at, like, Bo-Rick's.
So I'm an idiot. I'm paying $22. All right.
I'm just calling to say that as far as the inaugural ball thing goes, I forgot this is the first year. I'm 20 years old. This is the first year I haven't remembered an inaugural ball until I woke up that morning and flushed the toilet. It's rough. But basically, the problem that we're having in this country, and nobody really wants to point it out, is like in the McCarthy days. You were either with the McCarthys or you were deemed a communist, an outsider. And, I kind of see that coming back into play nowadays, at least for our generation, and nobody wants to point it out. You're either, a conservative, right-wing, Christian, Republican, or, you're a terrorist, you're an outsider, you're out to do the country harm. And I don't think it's very fair.
No, I agree with you. And, Brandon, during the 1950s, that horrible period when the Republican conservatives had the kind of power that they want to seize now, the Democrats just rolled over in the main. Not all of them, but they got so frightened themselves. And the Democrats have never been a party of opposition worthy of the name. I mean, they were always the other part of the racket. And when they could get in easily, they would. And now it would really take some gumption for them to take on the Republicans, and with just precious few willing to do it. Somebody like Barbara Boxer, who during those hearings for Condoleezza Rice, Imagine this being so wrong about weapons of mass destruction, and then you're promoted. You're promoted.
Exactly.
You blew it. You blew it totally. You wind up destroying this country, killing and injuring thousands of Americans, and we'll say, because of your great record. And also, she was a national security advisor during 9/11, asleep at the switch.
Scary, isn't it?
It is.
There's just so many problems right now, and you know the entire right wing just decided to wrap themselves up in the flag and the Constitution. You know, the question is, when are they going to decide to start using it themselves instead of implying it on those of us who choose not to live that way?
Well, one thing we have to remember, people tell me this show is like an oasis. Well, that's just within the media. There is a statistical, in terms of voters at least, dead heat. There's as many of us as them, and there's many more of us in the Detroit area than thems. So if we start acting like this tiny, isolated minority, that's our fault.
And that's exactly what we're going to become in the very near future, I fear.
Well, we got to do some. Get out to these events, and I don't just mean... like protests, but like if you go to my calendar, there's often kind of cultural events and any number of things that one can go to. And I've just got this one little small thing. And most of these things, it's not like when I say there's no. How can I put it? Whenever I list something on my calendar or the things that I go to that are political or cultural, I don't say, "Oh, this is really some boring, sad thing I have to go to." Usually. They're also, although they're about serious things frequently, there's a good fellowship there, and you get a sense that you're being active in the world to the extent that you can. Someone said, "Well, are they effective?" Well, I don't know whether they're effective or not, but I know that I always do what I can. I mean, just like with the tsunami relief. Some of us gave $10. That was the most we could give. What was that movie star that gave $1 million?
Yeah.
So?
But my trek with you began in October of 2002. I had previously called your show and stated, pros for the Iraqi war, and which at the time, I deemed it a good idea. Unfortunately, now it's doing us more harm than good. You know, something must be done about that soon, because I'm not going over there, to fight a war that I don't believe in.
Well, I'll tell you, Brandon, if when you have somebody like Cheney rattling swords about Iran, a guy that scammed out of the Vietnam War, that could have done what he's now getting other people to do, they're going to need a lot more troops. So it's could be on the agenda. Brandon, thanks. Thanks for joining us. Just two more calls, and then we're going to go to our interviews, as we call them. Hi, Luther from Troy. Thanks for joining us. Whoop, wait a minute. Hold on. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Love your show.
Thank you.
Just wanted to call and give Rip thanks for the show and just kind of just if you let me just express why I like your show, I'd appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay. I know it sounds pretty cheesy, but I'd just like to say that what I love about your show most is that despite the positions that you have that I agree with many of, not the whole board, of course, but you don't, when I'm done with your show,
mm-hmm.
I don't feel like there's a big monster full of hate on my back. I don't feel weighed down by everything.
Very good.
And the only, I love your interviews and that you do later on in the show. One suggestion that you guys might like to track down is a great Michigan Detroit born artist, because I've heard you do interviews about artists a couple times. A guy named.
Oh man, did I do that? This is terrible. Actually, call back, please. Call back. I mean, I want. Hey, what it? I didn't. I barely touched that. Hi, you're on the air. Is this Tybone? Is that how you say your name?
Tybone,
hi.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi. I just want to say one thing about these right-wing Republicans that's in power right now.
Sure.
They think they're Christians. They, kill in God's name or whatever. But in reality, they're not, because even Jesus Christ told his followers to look out for these people because they're really not Christians, you know. And I think it's pretty obvious.
Well, the Christians that I know, they're a different species. You're right. They believe they use their. You know what the hell happened? You know, the same thing just happened. I just lost this guy. Let me see. You know, I didn't even give proper credit to Raf Dizzy, who was our producer and our phone screener. Am I doing that? You didn't drop them off, did you? No, I didn't think so. Hey, you're right. Hair is worth the money. How much do you spend on your haircuts, Raf? I mean, it looks like you do it yourself, man. I'm only kidding. All right. Listen, to Taiban and to, I'm sorry, I forgot the other person's name. My deep apologies to you. I don't know what the hell happened. I'm not on the phone and hanging up the cradle. I've got this mouse and everything like that. Well, I don't want to go out with an apology. So hang on. We've got our one caller was just about to tell us who an interesting guest was about the arts. Rex, the first is about the electric guitar, and it's not just about rock and roll or jazz, but it's a whole way this guitar developed and a lot of social aspects of it. And then about folk art in Detroit. A couple of friends of mine did a nice new book for Wayne State University. So thanks for calling in, and we'll talk again next week.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Michigan winter, bitter cold, snow, sleet, freezing rain, black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present
Maui Time 2K5.
How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City, call it 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that. You could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5.
The Rift tradition continues.
Brought to you by Budweiser.
Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you.
From your home for Maui Time 2K5.
101 WRIF.
Chance to take control of the WRIF playlist.
The guy who lost control a long time ago.
The Riffs All Request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown, the big unit.
Weekday nights at 9
on 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station.
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 Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We relived an unfortunate encounter we had with Santa Claus from a few years back when we learned he wasn't wearing the required Santa outfit in its entirety. It was disgusting.
Do you wear the big black belt?
I have a big black belt, yes.
Okay, all right.
Well, you don't wear it continuously.
But when you're going to schools and stuff, surely you've got the black belt on and everything, right?
Well, it's not really necessary. They recognize me.
Oh, man, what do you show up in jeans or something? I mean,
Santa, you can't be in civilian clothes when you're Santa Claus.
I can't?
No,
you can't never.
Just
waltz in there with a T-shirt, with a pack of Marlboros in the pocket, and some jeans,
and
boots.
I don't do that.
No? No.
I try to answer all the letters. I usually enclose a picture.
Uh-huh.
Santa Claus.
With the hat on?
Knows me. I think one or two of them has a hat on.
All right.
I'm not too sure your dipstick's touching all, but
sends them in the nude.
Yeah, maybe I'm a couple bricks short of a load, Santa.
Yeah, your elevator don't go to the top.
Yeah, that's my kind of Santa. Just rips people.
Stick your Christmas up your ass. Ha, ha, ha.
Stop it!
Drew and Mike in the morning. The broadcast program.
On the Riff.
101-101.
And now, The Riff presents this Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment. Thank you. This Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment has been brought to you by 101 WRIF. This station rocks.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday
for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can.
Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the RIP Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the RIP. All day Thursday from your Walk Right In free station. 101. The RIP.
Will probably be the most important instrument of the 21st century. You can't really take the music out of American culture in the 20th century. And in terms of Johns Hopkins have a reputation for doing the most beautiful books about technology, you know, such as The Railroad Car. I mean, they make beautiful books where they treat the technology as an image, you know, as an artifact. And, you know, the guitar is such a, you know, beautiful artifact.
It is indeed. I mean, besides the sound that it makes, well, that's probably about 90% of the layman's appreciation, like mine. But then there is the object itself. But maybe we can do this, because it's pretty fascinating. Someone asked me, when did the electric guitar appear? I would say, you know, wasn't it the jazz guitarist Charlie Christian playing with Benny Goodman, but in the late 30s? But it goes back before that, doesn't it?
It does, but it was Charlie Christian who made the electric guitar, and that Gibson EH-150, you know, is a classic model guitar, and it has a really distinct sound. And I mean, it was Charlie Christian who took, in his own words, the guitarist from a robot just strumming to an artist, someone who was in the center. I mean, when you think about those Benny Goodman quartets and quintets, I mean, it's Charlie Christian's guitar that's the lead.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell people the previous role of the guitar. I don't think people...
Well, it had just been a basic rhythm instrument that was very soft, you know, in volume compared to the other instruments. And as bands grew bigger in the 20s and 30s, I mean, it was being basically overshadowed by saxophone, trumpet, you know, that horn section that was developed. And it was just in the background, just strumming the rhythm. That was it.
You can hear it sometimes on Count Basie when the band's a little quiet. You can hear just his guitar. And what was it? Freddie Green? He had a famous rhythm guitarist. But yeah, up till then in jazz, it was accompaniment to other bass instruments like the stand-up bass and the tuba.
Well, the thing is, if you think just about Count Basie, I mean, whatever the guitarist, I mean, the bassist. I mean, you listen to the bass on Count Basie because, I mean, it's, I mean, that is the instrument to me that makes, I mean, Count Basie, best rhythm section ever in my mind. Mm-hmm. And it's the drummer and the bassist that you listen to. They're both superstars in the world of jazz because they're louder and it's more an expressive, you know, more an expressive instrument. But once you start electrifying the guitar, you get all these tonal possibilities.
How did people react when they first heard an electrified guitar? It must have been fairly stunning reaction.
It wasn't in terms of jazz musicians. Certainly there was, you know, that it was accepted. You know, like what was holding Charlie Christian back was his race, I think, more than his guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the wonderful story of his acceptance with Benny Goodman, you know, one of the most discriminating tastes in the world of music, is a wonderful story. But I mean, in terms of when the guitar started to upset people is when it got loud,
mm-hmm.
and when it got into the hands of women, and maybe when it got in the hands of African American musicians and got into the mainstream of American popular music. That's when, you know, the sound was seen as a threatening sound. We have a little story in the book about a very little known female guitarist from the 30s. And, you know, she says that they didn't like her playing loud. I mean, they, you know, her name was Cordell Jackson, and she says, no man could touch what I was doing, she says. And they tried to take her guitar away from her or make her play quietly. You know, it's the volume of the electric guitar that gets to people.
Well, and the instrument is still seen as kind of predominantly a male instrument. We're sort of amazed when women play the guitar in the same style as men. I mean, during the 80s, I can't remember who was this woman. She used to a very, very attractive woman, and she played essentially in her underwear. You know, she was. You remember? You don't remember who that is? Someone. All these listeners.
Probably, obviously, made a big impression on you, Peter, didn't it?
Yeah, not her playing exactly. I don't remember that as well. But it is unusual to play the guitar in your underwear. I would.
It certainly is. Yeah. And it could have been, you know, Joan Jett.
Not or, Joan Jett.
Or
no.
One of those. Yeah. They were basically, or Susie Quattro. Basically, they were beautiful women trying to act like men mm-hmm. in leather outfits or in their underwear. But nowadays, you know, the gender distinction in the electric guitar, which you're perfectly right, I mean, they've significantly shifted in the 5 or 6 years, you know, that this book's been in preparation. I mean, now, in the advertisements for electric guitars, you know, you often see young girls playing as much as young boys, you know. I mean, in terms of the wrappings on the cover and the promotional material, so.
That's where marketing will lead culture.
Or it'd be an indication of culture.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
ways.
It's just a measure of, you know, they're not stupid, and I'm not. I think, you know, they know who's buying their guitars, and they know who wants an electric guitar, and so now it's really no longer a boy's toy anymore. But 10 years ago, I mean, is exactly, or maybe a little long. I mean, it's changed very, very rapidly, and now you see lots of bands with all female guitarists. And really, nobody raises an eye. But the thing is, they don't play in their underwear.
Yeah, that's good. That's an advancement as well. The book is The Electric Guitar, A History of an American Icon. And my guest on the Peter Werby Show is Andre Millard. He is the editor, has essays in there as well. And part of this book is about the technological development. So what did Charlie Christian do? Just take an old-fashioned guitar and slam a pickup on it?
No, he popularized Gibson's first big commercial attempt at having an electric guitar. And there were plenty of people who had put, you know, pickups on acoustic guitars and, you know, and amplified it. I mean, it's not that big a deal to amplify, but actually having, you know, the electrical pickup built into the guitar, and, you know, it was sold with an amplifier, which I think was less than 15 watts. And, you know, he was the great guitarist, he was a star, and he really popularized that instrument. I mean, at those days, you know, those were long ago, but I'm sure you remember him, Peter, you know, when jazz really was popular music.
I've read about it in the history book. and also that Benny Goodman, an incredible musician, an innovator, and also willing to overcome social convention at the time by integrating his band, which, of course, was not real popular at that time as well.
Oh, I know. I mean, and you've got to remember, back then, integration was rare or non-existent, and it was a very courageous move on his part because, you know, the division between the races was pretty strong, and especially in the entertainment field, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about some of these things that turn out to be innovations that are named after people. A lot of people have, I mean, I suppose if someone has a guitar and it's called a Les Paul, they understand that it's named after someone. Hopefully they know who it was. And things like the Fender, which I've had people think that, you know, it's named after, like, the part of the car or something like that. Could you talk a little, as we get up into the 40s and into the 50s, what sort of technology was developed by these men and what kind of impact it had on the music?
Well, Fender and Les Paul, you know, are kind of co-authors of the solid body electric guitar, which was, you know, the next logical step from putting a pickup on an acoustic.
Mm-hmm. So there's no sound box.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you're working with a solid piece of wood. And both Les Paul and Leo Fender, remember, were heavily into electronics. They were both, you know, they're known as guitar makers. But, you know, Les Paul was the man who developed the multi-track recording system used in recording studios. Leo Fender was known for his amplifiers well before he made that first broadcaster guitar. So what they were doing was kind of working on a system. And, you know, all the tonal possibilities that you can get out of a guitar, now you can go any route you want. You can change the amplification. You know, you can get a, you can work on that entire system to get a tone rather than just trying to alter the settings on the guitar itself or just the way you play, you know, your left hand technique. So when they were freed from that hollow body, then they could, you know, develop the electric guitar as a discrete instrument with its own, you know, tonal palettes.
Mm-hmm. You have these incredible photographs in your book, The Electric Guitar, as well. One of them is Les Paul, who I believe is still with us and still playing, isn't he?
He's still with us. He's still playing. Yeah. He plays the same place once a week in New York City.
That's right.
I understand he's in fine health, and you know, if any of your listeners really want an experience, go and listen to him play, and then he just hangs out with the audience.
Yeah. And he's what, probably in his late 80s?
Oh, I bet he's even older than that. I mean,
really?
I wouldn't surprise me. And, you know, but he still plays, and he's still, along with, you know, people like Chuck Berry in his 70s.
Hmm. Now, the photograph in your book shows he cut an acoustic guitar in half and put a solid strip he called the log.
Yep.
Explain that a little.
That, you know, there's all this different, I mean, the competition for who invented the solid body guitar is intense. And, you know, it's so important to the companies who are still competing and doing business that, you know, they'll sue one another if one of them claims, you know, to be the historical precedent for the guitar. So it's a very sensitive and highly controversial. But Les Paul, version of events is that he actually strung a pickup, which is really the important part, on that piece of wood, did you say, and then I think he was playing an Epiphone, and he took, you know, the two sides of the Epiphone, the hollow sides, and just glued it, I think, to that solid piece of wood. The important thing is that, you know, the amplification system could work with a block of wood. You didn't need, as you say, you didn't need a soundbite. People have put that pickup in bits of plastic and probably bits of cement or something like that. And that was a very important innovation. But as Les Paul says, no manufacturer was interested.
Hmm. Also, talk a little about the shape. The people have made the obvious observation that that the guitar, the classic guitar, the classical guitar, has the shape of a woman. And yet, did you ever notice that?
Well, there's a lot of people that.
Maybe I should talk to a therapist. Never mind.
You know,
this
is
the second time I've brought up women's bodies. Maybe I have a problem here.
I was
here.
Thinking, you know, is it going to turn out to be like the Howard Stern?
All right. I'm blushing a little, but let's get to the shape. But all of a sudden, the traditional shape of the guitar at the top on both the top and the bottom of it are sculpted out, and yet if the eye can form the shape of the traditional guitar, what's that all about?
Well, because it's an instrument like a violin, which also has a shape of a woman, and there has to be constructed primarily in view of its properties as an echo chamber, as an amplification.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's why you bend and shape that wood the way you do, and that's where the craftsmanship of the luthier comes in. You move to electric pickups, it doesn't matter what you put it on. I mean, that was the thing. It liberated guitar makers from one shape. They can make any shape they want. They could make any bass they want. I mean, the wood is still important to the sound of the guitar, but, the world was now their oyster. And if you just look at colors, you know, I mean, guitars came in violin finish.
Right.
Sunburst violin finish. Not anymore. When Fender and Les Paul out, you could get them gold. You can get them white, which is very, very popular. You get them red. And back to your comment about, you know, Fender being thought of as part of the automotive industry. They're based in California, and there's a lot of companies around them that make paint for automobiles.
Hmm.
They got a lot of their ideas for the paint finish for the electric guitar from, you know, those sparkle finishes and other glossy finishes developed by, you know, chemical companies that we won't name on the air.
Okay. I was just looking, because you have in your book, The Electric Guitar, that you edit, you have at least four essays. And just tell us about this one, Playing with Power, Technology, Modernity, and the Electric Guitar. We usually, like I said at the beginning, we take that sound for granted. But once one starts looking under the surface of anything, more appears. What's in here that you're looking at?
Well, the technology idea is the guitar as an example or a harbinger of modernity, of new technology. You know, it's developed. The solid body guitars start running, coming off the lines, you know, early 50s, 52, 54. At that point in time, you know, we're right after World War II. The United States is thinking of itself as the high-tech leader. And especially space travel.
Mm-hmm.
Shape of the guitars, many of those guitars, excuse me, you know, reflect space aerodynamic design, such as the Gibson Flying V.
I was just looking at that, yeah.
And so, you know, and the electrical guitar manufacturers, you know, position themselves as, you know, purveyors of very high technology and selling a very modern product. You know, they embrace, you know, as I write in the book, the American people were embracing space travel from, you know, NASA to the Jetsons.
Mm-hmm.
The electric guitar was just a wonderful example of this sort of design, but this sort of technology. And the playing of with power aspect was how the unlimited amount of power that you could get out of amplifiers changed the whole sound of music and the way you play the guitar.
Well, talk to us a little, because Andre Millard, you're Director of American Studies, Professor of History, about the image of the guitar itself, because in another era, we mentioned Benny Goodman in the 30s and the 40s, the clarinet, people like, besides Goodman, Artie Shaw, Buddy DeFranco, any number of people, band leaders, led with a clarinet.
Sidney Bechet.
Definitely. And the clarinet has gone into almost total eclipse, and someone would think now, if someone hauled one out, you're going to be treated to polka music. So that there's these, you know, Benny Goodman at Carnegie Hall with his clarinet raised to the sky. For those young people in the late 30s, our grandparents probably, that was this cultural image of you know, excitement and great music. And then now it's the guitar and that characteristic pose of, we think of a guitar player. What,
yep.
So there's this big cultural shift in imagery.
Yeah, it's the iconography. But remember,
yeah,
between the clarinet and the guitar, there was a saxophone.
Right, right.
I mean, the image of the guy playing the saxophone was a very powerful image.
Yeah, Red Prysock, a lot of those.
Oh, well, you know, but I mean, Charlie Parker and Dexter Gordon and all those smoky 50s clubs.
Those weren't really mainstream culture in many ways.
Maybe not so, but
yeah.
I think, you know, when we get to the first wave of rock and roll, you know, the lead instrument's the saxophone.
That's right. Yeah, in fact, I began playing the clarinet when I was a kid, and my father had great visions of me playing classical clarinet, and I wanted a saxophone, and he wouldn't buy it for me, so I quit. I just quit. Clarinet? What the hell, you know?
That's a hard instrument to master, though.
What, the clarinet? Well, yeah.
I mean, the saxophone's not easy either.
No.
The difference is the guitar is a very easy instrument to master.
Is it? Why? I mean, I've kind of picked it up once in a while. But
well, it's simple. You don't have to, you know, you can fret, you can make, you imagine the difference between trying to blow through a reed to reach a certain tone.
That's right.
And just getting your finger on the fret cleanly.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing is that you've got the whole, you know, all the scales literally at your fingertips on the fretboard.
Hey, let's. We were talking about gender, and we did mention about a little about race in terms of Charlie Christian, one of the innovators of or the innovator of jazz guitar. Is there does the guitar have a racial?
Most definitely, most definitely. It's an instrument of power. It's an instrument of sexuality. The people who created the sound that we associate with the electric guitar were all African American. It most certainly does. You know, that was one of the things why rock and roll was so frightening to the establishment in the 50s. it was an empowerment movement and a movement that embraced diversity.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think now, though, that the guitar is seen as an instrument of white rock and roll culture? Most African American music now is kind of doesn't employ them that frequently.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it depends what generation you're in.
Yeah,
our generation always sees it that way. Because, you know, we remember the great players, because we, you know, Muddy Waters and John Lee Hooker, Albert King and all those. So maybe this coming generation doesn't see it that way. But I mean, for every Eric Clapton, you've got an Albert King. I mean, in fact, Eric Clapton is kind of another Albert King in a way. I think where African Americans did not take the guitar was in heavy metal, which is now, you know, probably, in terms of radio, one of the most popular expressions of guitar music.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
I was kind of sorting through that, because there is such diversity of music, and it's all so niche now that kind of making a general statement is difficult. I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying. You know, we only have about a couple of minutes left, and I don't think much has been done with the violin in the last 300 years. Does the guitar have anywhere to go?
It does. You think of all the challenges it's weathered. It challenged the synthesizer challenge of the 70s and 80s. The sampler challenge of the 90s, I mean, it's kept pace with every technological development in music. And it's kept pace with every aesthetic, you know, every the way that popular music has developed. So, you know, hip-hop, for example, which you might on first glance think is devoid of electric guitars, is actually full of electric guitars. You can't get away from that electric bass.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And, you know, the people who sample electric guitars. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a very durable technology. And, you know, the number of guitars sold goes up every year. More and more people are playing them. So I really don't see any decline. I mean, I see a decline in certain styles of guitar, such as I think we've seen the end of jazz guitar, regretfully.
Really?
Well, I mean, you just don't hear it, do you?
Well, you don't hear a lot of jazz on the radio. Anyways, I just bought a new LP cabinet for all my LPs, and suddenly we started going through all my old jazz LPs. I'm going, oh my God, when they finally put me under house arrest, I'll be pleased to stay there, listen to my LPs, and read my books. The market giveth, the market taketh away. Look, just one last quick question. We only have about 60 seconds.
Okay.
There's not a lot of instruments that come along. I mean, I'm thinking of the saxophone in the, what was it, like the late 19th century, and the electric guitar. And it's kind of hard. I mean, how can one predict? I mean, what possible other instruments? There was like, what, the theremin that we, you know. Woo-hoo.
Yeah, that was an interesting instrument.
But anything, could you imagine, and this maybe is asking you for too much, I can't, can you, what, a new instrument?
Oh, there'll be a new electronic instrument, definitely. It'll be one of these multi-function sampler synthesizers. I mean, I don't think we're going to make any new sounds, but I think we are going to make the old sounds in different ways.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. My guest has been Andre Millard, and he is the editor and has several essays in the book, The Electric Guitar, A History of an American Icon. It's published by John Hopkins University Press, and Andre Millard is the director of American Studies and a professor of history at the University of Alabama. We in Birmingham, we could tell that by your southern accent.
This is true.
That's right. And the book is filled with great photographs, many in color, and it's everything from a history to contemporary reflections on what makes up our music. Thank you, Andre Millard.
Thank you, Peter, for having me.
This is the Riff's award-winning Night Call.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E, or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Drew was out ill and did one of the worst things you can do when in trouble. Leave us a message about it. Well, we had to compare a healthy Drew message with today's sick Drew message to see if we could hear a difference. Oh, boy.
It's Drew. Just wanted to lay this down in message form, requesting a day off next Friday, as I am going to the World Series.
Wow.
Hey, Mike, it's Drew. I am sick as a dog. I feel like a truck hit me. Well, the Cubs are 5 outs away. I shouldn't speak so soon. But I've got a ticket to the Thursday night Cubs World Series game. This is next week. And I don't feel like you want this. There's no way I can do it. I swear to God, I've never felt so sick in my life. I don't know what is wrong with me. But there's no way I can come in. So anyway, just wanted to drop that in ASAP. I found out it's too soon. I hope I don't jinx the Cubs. So I'll see you.
Oh,
I feel like and I'm going to call the friend Mike Tuck next. Thanks.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
101-101.
Riff.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold.
snow, sleet, freezing rain, black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5. How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City, call it 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5. The Rift tradition continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you. From your home for Maui Time 2K5. 101 WRIF. Make your requests.
Win cool riff gear.
And schmooze with the poobah. It's your all-request riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
On the Motor City's one and only home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff.
Rock.
Rock.
Twice.
Is nice.
Two for Tuesday on the riff. Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite riff rock bands.
Plus, the riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the riff rock.
Double the riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the riff. For 101 WRIF.
If it rocks. It really rocks.
Well, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Sky.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff.
Understanding in capturing the images that he has captured. They do speak for themselves, and they don't need 10,000 words, and I just threw 100 words at them as a kind of way to ease one into the work.
Yeah, and I just sort of chuckled there because we're going to get probably a few thousand words more out of both of you guys. My guests, David Clements and Bill Harris, and talking about a brand new book, Talking Shops, Detroit Commercial Folk Art. It's photographs of these incredible painted shops. And Bill Harris, I forgot, I've known you for so long, but I don't know, are you from Detroit?
Since I was two. Yeah.
Since, okay.
So I spent most of my life here.
So I was going to ask, because David's remark surprised me, that this is unique to Detroit. Is that your experience as well?
I think so. I mean, there are other cities that do different kinds of wall art. Philadelphia has a kind of, it's more homage to individuals and to ideas, but it's not necessarily as commercial. There are a few of these kinds of things in cities like St. Louis, but I think it is Detroit has taken it to, as we often do, to another place.
David Clements, there is 160, well, more than that, 170 some pages in here. I actually have a photograph, 167 or so. How many images? About 100.
There's 138 full color images.
Okay, and was that it? Did you exhaust?
Oh no, this is just the cream.
So this is a phenomenon. This is not you having to...
No, I've been shooting in Detroit for almost 30 years in terms of archiving our culture and our community. And that archive is just continually grows all the time. I'm on the streets almost every weekend shooting. It's a good time to be on the streets. You know, people are very friendly and very courteous. And when you go out and shoot buildings and architecture, people generally want to know why you're there.
That was going to be one of my questions. What do they say here? These are predominantly African-American shops in African-American areas.
Well,
here's this redheaded white boy.
I know.
Shooting.
I'm out shooting what was called Ethel's Cocktail Lounge, which is on Mac and St. Aubin.
Which is a famous place, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Ethel's was a big place for R&B. I mean...
Right.
Junior Walker and All-Stars played that place.
Okay.
James Brown played that place. Everybody came through Detroit, played Ethel's Cocktail Lounge. And it's January, and it's like a day like like this past Saturday or Sunday, it was real crystal clear and real cold. And it's a good time to shoot because, one, it's fairly safe. There's no one out. There's hardly anyone on the streets. So I'm out there shooting Ethel's Cocktail Lounge, and I hear across the street a voice comes out of this bar, the Elbow Lounge, which is still there, going, "Hey, there's some white boy out there by your Cadillac." And I'm going, "Oh, goodness." And out comes this gentleman, and he wants to know why I am out there standing next to his Cadillac. And I explain, "I don't care about your Cadillac. My interest was in the mural of Ethel's Cocktail Lounge, which is in the book." And he thought about it for a second, said, "Well, I've been going to Ethel's," and he told me his whole story about attending Ethel's and all the acts and people he's seen. Then he leaves me alone, goes back into the Elbow Lounge, steps into the doorway, and yells, "He's okay."
How about other? I mean, were most of these done without any notice or of the people whose establishment it was?
Yes, I don't deal with the people.
So rarely. This is a rare.
Sometimes business owners will come out and ask why this white guy is out here taking pictures, but generally,
what do you tell them? I tell them the truth. What?
I tell them I like the building.
Yeah.
I find the colors just exciting, and I think you did a real good job of doing it. And they're very proud of their buildings. They're very proud of their small business. They are trying to survive.
Bill Harris, there's always, we talk about in literature and art about the gaze, the particular, what are the assumptions in how something is presented. And, any thoughts on how, this is presented to some extent as being a quaint art form, which suggests a lot of things, or does it? Or am I making too much of it?
Yeah, again, I think it's... to go to a cliche, it's in the beauty or the purpose is in the eye of the beholder. The thing that I see is a recording of, and a thing that David mentioned, just the entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, what these buildings are about, it seems to me, and it's the thing that I talk about in the foreword, is these individuals' attempt to have a piece of the American dream. And there's no greater dream in America, it seems to me, than to be the owner, the man who... man or woman who owns their means of survival. And these buildings represent that to me. And, again, it's in the African-American community, and they not only are themselves, but they are these kind of echoes that come off of it in terms of what it says about America, what it is to want to be an American. And these are just symbols of that kind of thing to me.
Are they often dashed hopes, though? I mean, David Clements, a lot of this is gone,
it's
right?
It's ephemera. It's short term.
Yeah.
It truly is. They put this enormous amount of effort into painting the building green with yellow sign on it. It says, keep it real car wash. But there's no one going to the car wash. Another example would be Yetta Booze, Boobs and Buns, Hand Car Wash. Now, the gall of...
Sorry, I missed that one.
Well, I met Yetta, and she can do the job.
Well, that was one of the people you met. David Clemens is my guest. Bill Harris is my guest as well. David Clemens did the photography for Talking Shops, Detroit Commercial Folk Art, and it's photographs, incredible photographs. We'll talk about some of the categories soon of commercial art in Detroit, but not done by almost never. I would say next to never done by a commercial firm. Although it's commercial folk art, it is folk art of commercial entrepreneurs.
These people just decide that they want to paint grapevines on the building or something like that, and they just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no one to say no to them. You wouldn't see this happening in Macomb County or Oakland County or nearly anywhere in the country. This is really quite unique to Detroit.
Well, let's talk, and Bill Harris, maybe you could speak to this. Just through a long process, became friends with a guy who had moved up here from Alabama, and he was living on the east side of Detroit, and he was just asking me about places to go, and he was pretty close to Tyree Guyton's Heidelberg Project block, where, as many of you may know, is that Tyree has collected the, what's the fancy word that begins with D? D- detritus, isn't that it?
Or just,
you know, the junk, and
right.
made art out of it, essentially. And so this friend of mine began laughing, and I said, what's so funny? He said, you'll see. So we pulled up to the house where he lived. He was living with a retired Chrysler worker, and there, all over his house, was hubcaps and this same sort of thing that you find at Tyree's, where that he said to some extent was a black Southern folk art mm-hmm. expression.
Mm-hmm.
So
which comes from Africa. I mean,
okay,
essentially,
what
we're talking about is a trip back, in again, in that anthropological sense, it goes back to Africa. There are tribes in Africa that use wall painting as a natural part, the Indibili. The women paint often in the same kinds of colors, often in the same kinds of patterns, which seem to have a kind of randomness to the Western eye.
Mm-hmm.
But to the African eye and to the African-American eye, in terms of that evolution, is a part of the trip back to, you know, the beginnings of who African Americans are as a people. So there's this real connection too, which has been captured, and because many of them are gone, if not all of them at this point, the book takes on an additional kind of value, just as a historical document.
Well, that's interesting because cultural memory, which we often think is eradicated, I mean, so much of it obviously eradicated by hundreds of years of slavery, and then, although there's still battles to be fought, integration into mainstream America, that history erupts in unexpected ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And again, these are so joyful that it just speaks to a whole other aspect of the African-American experience that we tend to forget. I mean, these are celebrations of being themselves, of their attempt, again, to be a part of the greater Western culture, to get that piece of the dream.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, what may be identified as African-American culture is actually African-American working-class culture, because
mm-hmm.
Successful entrepreneurs of African background, they go get their
right.
$100,000 neon sign.
Right, exactly.
And not to say that all these businesses are African-American. There's Asians.
Okay.
There's, in terms of Vietnamese. There's Chaldean-Americans that are hiring people just to decorate their businesses, partially to be an attraction to that mm-hmm. African-American community, to bring them in. And they're spotless stores. These businesses are very clean and very neat and very safe.
Mm-hmm.
And in an environment that often isn't safe or inviting, these are little oases.
Well, it's in some ways, it's too bad you couldn't have talked to more people, because I'm sure, given the quality of art on so many of these buildings, that they, I'm sure, would have expressed an immense pride.
Right, if they're there. Quite often they're gone.
Yeah. Tell us about the cover of Talking Shops, Detroit Commercial Focus.
Talking Shops cover actually is a element from East Side Check Cashing, which is on 6 Mile around Alter, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an amazing building. It's actually an old gas station that on three walls is a panoramic history of Detroit from that artist concept, basically from the 1920s on. But it's an amazing amount of work somebody commissioned. I mean, the work itself has both Coleman Young and Berry Gordy painted on it.
Right, and Hudson's, the old Hudson's building.
Hudson's building, and the trolley cars that were here.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of memorabilia of things that are certainly predate me.
Yeah.
And then the gangster era and the war years. But all this stuff has been painted on the wall fairly meticulously.
Mm-hmm. Remind, dead center is Elijah McCoy. I'm probably reminded.
Elijah McCoy is a reference to the real McCoy.
Really?
The real McCoy was the first self-lubricating brake on railroad cars.
Huh.
And Elijah McCoy was actually a Canadian who came to Detroit as an engineer and worked in the railroad industry in Detroit.
So this actually, now I'm looking at this more and more and seeing these elements in this painting that decorates the cover of Talking Shops. And there is also the Barry Sanders mural way
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice that?
Yeah. And then also other basketball players. I don't know who that would be exactly. Pistons.
That actually says Lakers. Or maybe he's just being out-jumped by Isaiah. I think that's his only function.
Isaiah
there.
Scoring over him.
Yeah. That's right. I think you can tell, dear audience, just by listening to me, how delightful and what kind of and this is an odd joy that this brings. I mean, simply, why shouldn't it? Visual items joyful.
This is a very positive book about metropolitan Detroit. And showing what people are doing in their own communities.
Mm-hmm.
It's not negative at all. It's fun to look at. It's very, very bright and rich in colors. And through the photography of which I was able to achieve, and Wayne State University published very well, actually.
Yeah, they did it.
We have all this wide variety of stuff from hair salons to religious
paintings. Us, yeah, I was going to ask you about the groupings of it.
Well, the book is broken up in units or segments. There's hand-painted storefronts like Mr. Fix-It, Auto Repair, in which it has the Holy Bible even painted on the wall for some reason, you know. And another icon that always turns up is the Renaissance Center. It turns up. And then you have like Pep's Auto Wash, which whoever painted this was real good at painting the rear ends of women and not real good at painting the rest of their bodies. And then you get into little storefront churches like the Temple of Love, which has a Star of David hanging over the door for some reason. And then you get into humorous stuff like Hallelujah, Beauty and Barbershop, Gospel Records. And then their little slogan is, Let Hallelujah Do You.
Oh, it doesn't get much better.
And then you meet people like Gospel Hands Hand Car Wash. And I met the minister, a female minister, who came out and shook my hand. And wanted to know why I was there, of course, and would not let go of my hand until I told her.
Let me just interject, and this gets back a little bit what I was saying about the gaze. I mean, to some extent, we're all chuckling because it does have this quaintness. On the other hand, it shows the capacity of people that are poor the way they survive, the way that that someone is a minister and he owns a car wash and
they're just hustling.
Yeah,
you know, and
but in a good sense, though.
And so, no question.
Yeah.
No, they're hardworking people.
Yeah.
You know, and we have in the book there is a mosque that's it's the mosque that they had the call to prayer controversy.
Oh yeah,
in Hamtramck, and someone said to me, "Look at all the tile work on that wall." And I had to point out to him it's all hand painted.
what's your favorite in there? Do you have a favorite?
Oh, there's several favorites. I really like the Grim Reaper. It's a picture of the Holy Bible in flames. With the Grim Reaper standing in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in front of all that is a fire hydrant. And people say strange things, you know, like Satan is a lying flag burner. Now, why someone would paint that on the wall, I really don't really choose to understand that.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of religious stuff with the Bible painted with six religions around it. Now, why someone went to the effort to do that, I don't know, but it's quite a dynamic photograph, actually.
Yeah, I think it just speaks to the diversity that's in the community. I mean, it isn't a monolithic kind of thing here. I mean, everybody does not think with the same mind, see with the same eyes, speak with the same voice, and it's captured in this very public way on these facades.
Right, mm-hmm. And you have clubs like Sin City Motorcycle Disciples. And Disciples is spelled wrong, you know. So here's
I would say my favorite is from the cover, which it has a number of panels inside the east side check cashing. But for some reason, also the appliances on the wall, which have sort of this surreal character.
Well, they're not only they're surreal, but a woman friend said to me, only a man would paint that because it shows a stove with a turkey cooking in it.
Yeah.
But there's no pan under the turkey.
There you go. Bill Harris, any favorite in here? It's hard to, of yours?
It is difficult. I mean, I like the Hallelujah Will Do You just as a piece of text. But again, it's all a delight. And the idea of capturing all of this just intrigues me as a kind of historian and lover of, historical kinds of things, African-American. Again, I think it's a very important document.
Yeah.
You know, I was shooting Ned's Perfect Spot Car Wash, which was on Van Dyke and 7 Mile. And I'm out there, and it's on a Saturday afternoon. It's hot in the summer day. And Ned comes out and wants to know why I'm standing in the middle of the street taking a picture of his car wash, which is all blues and with soap sud bubbles painted all over it and all kinds of stuff. And I said, well, I just really liked it. He said, well, come on back and meet the family. And see, I've got something else I want to show you. And so I was invited into his community. Mm-hmm. And so I was taken to the back of the building, and it's been a long day. People have been washing cars all day. Ned's there with his wife, and he's got three or four kids. And the adults are sort of half in the bag. And back in the back is like a old 1985 Pontiac, which is all customized. It's metallic green. It's got big wheels on it. And it's all gold rim and wires. And then on the wall is the same vehicle painted on the wall.
Yeah, I remember that image in here.
This turns out to be a memorial to Ned's lost brother or cousin who has died recently in the community.
You know, we're remiss. We have Bill Harris here who wrote the foreword to Talking Shops, Detroit Commercial Art, Commercial Folk Art, and David Clemens who did the photography. But since there's only three mics, we didn't invite Jerry Herron, the Wayne State professor who wrote the afterword. Also, with the three of us talking and adding Jerry, I just don't
missing.
Know.
You miss it.
What did Jerry say that was important to the, you don't know?
I haven't read the book.
Read it.
still working on the book. Right. I'm only at picture number four. I don't know what the hell he said. One of the things I like in the book is they have these slogans that are painted on walls, like Flag Soul Food, which is on the east side of Detroit. They have painted, and it's a beautiful building. And it says, food's so good, got to take your shoes off to eat. I'm not quite sure what that means.
Wow.
Whether maybe you eat
well,
with your
shoes.
Well, sort
of down home.
Indeed. I mean, signs like Home with a Murder Burger.
Ooh.
And then there's Johnny's Ham King, which is a really good place to eat, actually.
Well, maybe we've actually got about 40 seconds left. Maybe we could invite Jerry Herron in to...
Squeeze him in and
breathe it out. What next? Just real quickly, in about 20 seconds, because I want to ask Bill Harris, who does a lot of incredible cultural work as well. What do you got in the fire, so to speak?
Oh, other than trying to be employed,
yeah.
Hopefully start a new book on churches.
Good. Well, there's a lot in
there's supposedly 3,400 churches in Detroit.
Wow. And Bill Harris, a lot of your plays have been produced. Anything in production now?
I think the 12th in St. Louis, we open a piece called Stories About the Old Days, and we do Robert Johnson in Chicago in June.
Great. Well, thanks to both of you. Bill Harris, poet, playwright, and professor of English at Wayne State University. David Clemens, who has done the photography for Talking Shops and subtitled Detroit Commercial Folk Art. It's a beautiful book. It's published by Wayne State University. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you much.
Thank you for tuning in to the Riffs Night Call. Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio or Greater Media Detroit. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby. Now stay tuned for more Riff Rock, coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Are you one of the millions of men embarrassed by premature...
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there?
Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center.
At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games.
Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye.
You know your costs up front with no hidden charges.
You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit.
The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking.
One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan.
You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast.
Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE.
Again, 1-877, the letter U,
S-E-E-M-O-R-E.
Or visit UC.
NYCMore.com.
These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve.
You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses.
It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them.
Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, five-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877-SEE-MORE. Or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free